Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 112 of the Savage and Credit Sports Podcast here for you on another Wednesday night, 7:21 p.m. Plenty to talk about this week for hockey stuff. You know, I've teased that we'll get more into hockey stuff as we approach the preseason and stuff, and it might have just been like the MacKinnon news becoming the highest paid player in the league, just a smidge over Connor McDavid. Double his cap hit from before, goes from 6.3 to 12.6. But then we had a slew of retirements, Keith Yandle, PK Subban, and the most important, Zdeno Chara. So, yeah, I mean, I thought we were just going to have some quick training camp notes and the MacKinnon stuff, but we have some retirement news to talk about on top of plenty of football, and one quick Red Sox note and one quick Celtics note with some unfortunate injury news. But before we get into moments of the week and all the good stuff, Ryan, how are we doing on this fine Wednesday night?
Not bad. Like you, I'm assuming like you are surprised with all the retirement numbers. I know there was a lot of stir when Chara was seen around the Bruins. So there was maybe some rumors that he was, you know, hanging out with Bruins stuff, and people were maybe starting to get worried that, oh, maybe the Bruins are going to bring Chara back. I don't want to see that, but I think it all makes a little bit more sense now that he signs obviously the 1 day contract to retire. And end what was a great career for him. But yeah, surprising. I didn't even know about Yandle, to be honest, until you just said that. I knew it was obviously Chara yesterday and then Subban. But surprising, to say the least, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. Like, I saw one meme about – it was like somebody, like, hitting send on whatever app it was and then just running away. And it's like PK Subban after he saw Chara's retirement news. Because I swear it came out, like, 10 minutes after.
It seemed like it. I was scrolling through Twitter and just saw it. I'm like, oh, what the – this is kind of random, just out of nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't expect to see PK Subban retire. I mean, he's definitely – getting worse and worse year by year, but I guess he just didn't feel like the opportunity was there. He wants to get into TV. That's what I think is on the horizon for him. I mean, the guy's got a great personality. I could absolutely see him hopping on a TV deal somewhere soon, but you never know. He could just want to just do his own thing. I'm sure if he's not on TV, in some sense, he'll still be active on social media because he's very active on social media. But yeah, it was crazy to see a few guys like we grew up with a lot of our lives, like more so Chara and Yandle, but all retire within like 24 hours. It was pretty wild. Keith Yandle announced on Spit and Chicklets. He played words on like the whole, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, but he said he's going to South Beach to do nothing. Then he also talked about in the interview I listened today, like, you know, he might join the ranks like hockey ops somewhere with some team in the future, but Subban, you never know. I mean, he could just want to stay in hockey, or he could want to go to media, or he wants to just do nothing. But and then Chara, the biggest one, talks about, you know, he doesn't know what he wants to do right now for the future. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he just takes a full year with the family in Boston. He's around the garden every once in a while, kind of like a Tuukka thing, like how Tuukka's been ever since he's retired. By the team. But I mean, there was credence to the rumors of like PTO stuff because he was around the team. Then Sweeney drops the nugget like, oh, we're waiting to hear back on a PTO. Originally it was just a PTO. Then we heard today, like, oh, we're waiting to hear back. Like, make this player's making the decision, which obviously has no relevance to the Chara thing because the retirement news is out, but who knows what the PTO will be. I wouldn't be surprised if it's local guy, Brian Boyle, but that's just, I want to throw it out there. But yeah, I mean, it didn't hit me as hard as I thought it would. Not because I don't have appreciation for Chara. It's like just something I've prepared myself mentally for a while. Were you in like a different camp? Or were you like, whoa, like he's done, like it's crazy? But like, if it were like a few years in the past, it would have like hit me like, holy shit.
Yeah, if he ended it as a Bruin.
With the Bruins.
Exactly.
You know, that's a 1 day, which is technically he's on the team, but it's just, it's got a different energy to it.
Yeah, I think you put it good that we've had a couple years now that he's been gone with Washington, obviously, and then back with the Islanders. You've kind of had years to process that this is probably coming. Like, I'm with you. We probably would have blindsided, not really blindsided, but you know what I mean. Like, if, like you said, if they ended it with the Bruins, I think it probably would have hit home a little harder. Obviously, great to see, like I said, the 1 day thing come into play and him be able to retire a Bruin. That was cool, but it didn't really hit me all that hard. Like, it was kind of one of those things. The thing that surprised me the most is you forget how long he was, or at least I did, forgot how long he was in the league. When he's at 25 years, I'm like, I knew it was a while, but didn't think it was like that long. That's like Brady-esque. I've seen a lot of people kind of throw that term around that, you know, he's the closest when it comes to Tom Brady and stuff like that, the Brady of the NHL. But no, to answer your question, it didn't really, you know, what surprised me all that much. So you kind of can see it coming. And again, like if he retired like an actual Bruin, like played his entire career up and then kind of called it quits at the end of last year as a Bruin, I think that probably would have hit home more, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah, and it kind of like another thing to add to the whole Chara thing with how things ended this year with like all the round of applause and like the emotion surrounding his final, you know, games or so with the Islanders this year. It was like, after all this, you got to feel like he's going to retire.
Yeah, I kind of see it coming. Writing was on the wall.
And I mean, he didn't like fall off completely, but he, you know, he wasn't as effective. He was getting less minutes. I think he knew that. And he's, you know, he's accomplished so much. So it's okay for him to walk away when he feels most comfortable. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's got the option to be in Boston. He's lived here for a long time, even after, you know, he left the Bruins to sign elsewhere. But I mean, yeah, the most physically imposing defender ever, I'd say. I mean, there are a lot of people that'll talk about Scott Stevens, but Scott Stevens wasn't 6'9", 255 pounds. So yeah, I'm giving the edge to the big man.
I would, yeah, have to agree there.
In terms of lethal open ice hits and oftentimes hurting people, I'd give the edge to Scott Stevens, but my God, yeah, I really don't think there's any chance we see a guy that's this big, plays for this long, and is this accomplished ever again.
Oh, probably not. This is like a once in a lifetime, like unicorn type of thing that you'll, like you said, you'll never see a player, not of his caliber, but like you said, size and skill and everything. And like you mentioned kind of with the lethal hits and stuff, it was a guy that obviously had a strange body for the sport, but kind of knew or grew into knowing how to play in it. Like he wasn't like reckless with it or anything, or wasn't always going out and like intending to injure people. So that was kind of one of the craziest things about him too.
Yeah, he was a gentle giant when he needed to be, but he could also be fierce. No doubt about that.
Yep.
I mean, Stanley Cup champion, Norris Trophy, won the Mark Messier Leadership Award once. Just one of the greatest leaders the league has ever seen. Just an absolute legend. They talked about the number being in the rafters. That's a sure thing. So we'll see
absolutely
in the next year or two, I imagine. It's going to be crazy not seeing him. Like it really is. And but luckily for, you know, hockey fans and Bruins fans, we'll see him around the game, I think, at some point. But I wouldn't be surprised if he just like chills at least for like a year. Maybe he gets bored. I don't know. Maybe he joins the team midseason somehow. But I think he's going to take some time to himself, well-deserved time, and do what he likes to do. He's very old-fashioned from the sounds of things, you know, likes to do his thing his own way. And he's just a noble, gentle giant. I'm sure people will see him biking around the city like I did after a couple of days after the Cup parade in 2011. And somebody, you know, there was a picture going around of him on the bike recently. So, you know, he loves it. He'll be around the city. He'll be around and doing his own thing. But just an insane career. 1,680 games, 25 seasons, larger than life, like literally and figuratively. He was
absolutely
unbelievable. The greatest pure leader I've ever seen in any sport. Just the way he handled himself. It's, you know, that's crazy to say with Tom Brady, you know, being a person, but the grace he did it with, like, and the professionalism and just the pure dominance. Like, he's right up there with Brady, Bergeron, so many leaders, like Bill Russell, rest in peace, was an incredible leader. Like, we've seen so many, like, of course, Bill Russell's before us, but you know, especially Boston and New England in particular, just has produced some crazy leaders, crazy good leaders, and Chara is no exception to that. And well, crazy to see that he's done, but what an insane career.
Oh, not to knock on Brady by any means, but the big thing, like you say, about Chara, kind of the pro and the leadership thing, is at times when we saw it with Brady in New England, we've seen it with Brady in Tampa Bay. Like, if the tends to get on the young guys from time to time, like, he's not afraid to show his frustration. Chara, it seemed like, never was really ever that guy. I mean, there's obviously the story about him not wanting anybody to call anybody rookies because he found that, like, demoralizing, or, you know, there was the hazing problems he talked about when he first came up in the league. So that, I think, kind of puts him maybe a step above Brady for that. Like the, like I said, the pro's pro always, you know, was putting other people, it seemed like, before himself, and what, like you mentioned, made him such a great leader and such, you know, probably one of the best, maybe across all sports. I don't know. I feel it'd be hard pressed to find someone. Yeah. I feel it would kind of hard pressed to find someone that, you know, didn't like Zdeno Chara just for what he did, what he stood for and everything.
So that's Canadians fans.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, that, people who, you know, like yeah. maybe Max Pacioretty's family and Canadians fans might differ from that, but who knows?
It's a, like a perfect example of how his leadership was passed on, too, was the story that Elliot Friedman talked about the other day with Jeff Merrick on 32 Thoughts when they were talking about Blake Wheeler, and like they were talking about him and like his past in the Bruins a little bit, and it segued into a story about how Patrice Bergeron played his 1,000th game, got all these gifts for players, and Trent Frederick, it was just, that game was his fourth career NHL game. You might think, you know, rookies are kind of an afterthought, you know, not to say other leaders like forget about rookies, but like, you know, you think of the core guys first. But Patrice Bergeron went to Frederick after the game and he's like, hey, I just wanted to make sure, you know, you got a gift and you know, you weren't like, not like, I don't
left
know,
out,
like, left out, but like he wanted to make sure that Frederick was included. And, you know, for a situation like that, I feel like it could be easy for a rookie to be like, oh, wow, like I'm a new guy in this like massive situation in terms of magnitude. Like it's a little intimidating, but that must have been really nice for Frederick, and just shows, I imagine he got some of that wisdom from Chara, and just shows how Bergeron has carried the torch so well.
Well, that's kind of the big thing on Chara, too. I feel like a lot of people have talked about the last couple of days is just the amount of like cultural change the Bruins went through once he got here. And it kind of obviously stems from that leadership quality that he had, that like it's a completely different team now. Like you mentioned, you have guys that have been here for a while that have kind of learned how to lead themselves from Chara, like the Bergerons, like the maybe Marchands, people like that over there. Like Krejci, just to throw names out there, too. Yeah. Yep. McAvoy, obviously up and coming, playing with Chara. So that, yeah, makes a ton of sense. But yeah, just a complete, again, all-around character guy that was, you know, larger than life. I know it's kind of obvious to say with the size of the guy, for lack of, you know, better terms, but still.
Yeah, he's just ridiculous. One of my favorite moments is the hat trick, too, with the ballerina. Ballerina, the spin move. There's just so many. Like,
being tip the cap afterwards.
Evander Kane, game five in 2019 with the broken jaw that he somehow played through. Like
that's the go-to for me. I know a lot. I think NBC Sports Boston put out a poll, like what's your defining Chara moment, or like what's your biggest memory? And I think the obvious one was him lifting the cup. But like, to me, that's the one, again, just to type shows the type of player that he was to, you know, obviously go through. I can't even imagine how painful that must be playing that sport too. Like, you know, you're going to get hit up there again a couple times in that game or just moving forward. The type of grit and determination, you know, to overcome that was just, again, the type of player that he was. Put himself before, or, you know, didn't put himself before, rather, the team, and, you know, went out and did whatever he had to do to help out.
Yeah. I wanted to share a couple things Joe McDonald shared on Twitter, a couple that stood out to me in particular. Funzie, fact number three, before his legendary introduction prior to Game 5 against the Blues in the 2019 final at TD Garden, NBC told Bruins PA guy Jim Martin not to pause before announcing Chara. Martin disagreed and paused, setting up a perfectly timed ovation, which like just added to the legendary status of that moment. Fun fact number eight, I'm not going to read all of them, but if you want to go check it out, go to Joe McDonald's Twitter at Joey Mac Hockey. Apparently there was a bit of a debate when the Bruins were flying home from Vancouver with the cup as to who would carry it off the plane. Finally, Chara says, as captain, he was carrying it off. The debate quickly ended.
I feel like that should have really never been a debate. I saw that one and I'm like, why was that a debate to begin with? You would think the captain would take the cup, be the first one off the plane with the cup, but I guess I don't know who would have been challenging that, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know who was on that team that had not a big ego, but like maybe like Tim Thomas. I don't know. Like
maybe it was just something that came up in the chaos and the celebration. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Yadmila Lucic putting out a message to him on Instagram and Twitter, Kevin Miller, Andrew Ferentz, Johnny Boychuk, who actually recently, you know, talking about guys post-career taking roles with a team they played for. He takes player development role with the Islanders. He put out a tweet saying, congratulations on an amazing career, amazing in all caps, Big Z. They may need a bigger door to fit you through where you are going, hashtag HHOF. So, no doubt Hall of Famer. I don't know how he got, well, without mentioning that, Bruins Hall of Famer. Like, in the rafters, all of it, all of it. So undoubtedly true. So undoubtedly like a lock.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Leslie at Ryan Leslie Media posted a picture of them too and said, flashback to two old teammates and friends catching up in New York, asked Lucic who would win in a tilt, and he told me a story about how they wrestled once and it did not go well for Milan, which is saying a lot because that's practically taking down a bowling ball.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like a giant bowling ball. So, yeah, that's, you know, having ridiculous physical fitness and being 6'9", 255 helps in that scenario, though. Even
absolutely.
Though you're going against a guy like Lucic. But yeah, there's so many memories. Like, I liked Andrew Ferentz's comment a lot too. He said, "You earned every one of those games, buddy. Congratulations on an incredible run. There isn't a stat line for it, but your positive influence and example in your work ethic helped countless guys have successful and long careers." So, yeah, just a guy that his legacy will never be forgotten. One of the true Bruins legends, maybe the most important signing in Bruins history.
Definitely would not argue that. Unbelievable. I think you're, yeah. Spot on with that.
The whole direction of the franchise threw people off with, you know, how willing to spend they were all of a sudden on guys like Krejci, Mark Savard, you know, who had his career derailed by injuries, but was so good for so long, a prime playmaker, prime passer. Then, you know, around that time, you're seeing the evolution of guys like Lucic, Krejci, Marchand, eventually a little while down the road. Those years were so formative to put the Bruins in a spot where they still are now. Like, they've extended this core and made adjustments on the fly, not all perfect, and just set up this culture that's been to be in the playoffs every year for a long time, year after year. It hasn't worked out every year, but a signing like that truly changed the direction of the Bruins, and they don't win the cup in 2011 without Zdeno Chara. He had so many nights where he just played ungodly minutes, took physical beatings. Even as a big 6'9" guy, you know, that's those bumps and bruises add up. The fact that he played for this long is ridiculous. And
insane.
I'm going to miss him. It's going to suck to not see him out there. Like, even on the Capitals and the Islanders, it was cool to see him out there. He's just a giant. And yeah, had an irreversible impact on the game. So it sucked to see him retire, but it's something I think we both expected for a little while now. And it was awesome to see him do it as a Bruin. I'm really glad they did that. The past few years, that's what I've been hoping for. He's going to sign a one day and do it right. They had a joking clause in the contract saying he's got to keep in physical shape at all times. I don't think that'll be a problem.
No, I don't think
Knowing his health habits and
yeah,
how much of a freak of nature he is when it comes to his health. But yeah, we want to wish Big Z the best. He's probably a big listener of the pod. So
I bet.
You know,
he's got a lot of free time on his hands now. If he isn't already, he can catch up.
If he wants to come on, I mean,
what else are we doing?
I don't know if we'll ever have a taller guest ever. So
probably not.
That would be the craziest thing. I'd actually shit bricks if we had Zdeno Chara on ever. But I don't know. That might be lofty. But yeah, there's no limit on the good things we can say about Chara.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. Very hard pressed to find someone that did not, especially around here. I think Zdeno Chara is one of the more well-liked guys, maybe across all of sports, again, for what he did, what he stood for, just a great all around character guy.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to see what's next. Cause you know, he's active on social media. We'll keep up with him, and you know, they'll post some content about him here and there. I'm sure we'll be at some games and stuff and interacting with the guys, because still got a huge impact on this team, even though he's been off of it for a few years now. So, Big Z, I mean, the man, the myth, the legend. I'm excited to see what's next for him. Some unfortunate hockey news. Like, it's just unsurprising, though, because Bob Nicholson is amongst this organization, and he's been tied to the Hockey Canada shitstorm. He's, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, in hockey operations with the Oilers as well, works in cahoots with Ken Holland, who's the GM. Jake Virtanen signed to a PTO, tied to sexual assault in the past, gets let go, bought out by the Canucks, goes over to the KHL, scores 16 points in 36 games. Got to have that guy back.
That's, yeah, nothing too stellar.
Come on, man. Like, you got your captain and Connor McDavid, like, making comments on the whole Hockey Canada situation that did not go well for him and kind of blew up in his face, got lit up on the internet opposing to Kale McCarr, who gave really much more earnest comments on the situation. It's just stupid. It's like, leave these guys elsewhere. Leave them elsewhere.
They're out of the league for a reason.
Yeah, and especially with the whole thing going on with the 2018 situation.
Yeah, that
too. The 2018 World Juniors in London, Ontario. Like, stop it. Like, leave him in the KHL or just to do whatever. Maybe he stays in the KHL. Maybe he doesn't get a deal because nobody else wants him. But in Russia, they'll take anybody that's, you know, got a troubled past. And apparently the Oilers will give someone a PTO too. It's just, it's so stupid. It's so unnecessary. Like, I don't care if he put up 70 points in 36 games in the KHL. Like, it's just so stupid.
Still not worth it now.
A guy that was a high draft pick in 2014 and fizzled out for a reason and has a troubled past now, and you're bringing him on him in on a PTO. You have a guy in Bob Nicholson that's tied to the Hockey Canada shitstorm. Terrible look. You have to be smarter than that. It just shows if teams think a player can help them, their past really doesn't matter sometimes. And that's pretty stupid. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just what teams do. Very stupid. It's just one of those things that makes you shake your head. Speaking of things that make you shake your head for other reasons, Bryson DeChambeau's meltdown on, like, over, come on. Rope. There is no guy that this fits better for than Bryson DeChambeau because he's such a douchebag. He's so full of himself. He loves just being a douche. That's kind of, I don't know if there's any better way to describe it. He walks into a rope and acts like he's like severely injured. He's like,
I still don't know how you don't see that. Those are pretty clear cut on a, like, I mean, I'm obviously never played on a professional golf course, so I can't imagine it's too different from the ones that are on the amateur courses and the ones that I play on. Like, those are
shit. Yeah. You need a towel. Like,
the guy reacted like he got shot by a sniper and instead of walking face first into a rope. Like,
he does himself no favors. I don't know how much the criticism bothers him. I don't really care.
Probably not a lot. So
insufferable. But yeah, that's a guy with a big enough ego to the point where he either takes it very personally and doesn't let people see it, or he's like, I'm better than these people. Like, he's just the fucking worst in golf. Mm-hmm. He's such a loser. And this, like, just a pathetic video, a hilarious video from, like, how, from a standpoint of how pathetic it is.
How big of a baby he is, yeah.
Had to mention that. Just ridiculous. We're not going to have, like, a huge Bruins segment, so I figured I'd, you know, do the typical thing where we mention some hockey stuff amongst the moments of the week here. Preseason starts on Saturday. We're going to get a younger look in the lineup. We're going to get some Lysel, Beecher, I imagine, which would be fun. Got to see them in the Prospects Challenge, arguably the Bruins' two best players, as expected. Didn't get to watch the Pittsburgh game, but watched good chunks of the Montreal. Wait, was it Montreal? Getting the first opponent. And then New Jersey. I'm glad Fabian Lysel's okay, because the New Jersey player literally tried to take his head off, like Matt Cook style, blindside hit. And Jackson Edwards, seventh round pick this year, the Bruins did not take kindly to that and gave the guy a piece of his mind. They didn't get into a fight, but they got in a little scuffle on the boards. Lysel's going at it with a guy in another game. Jakub Lauko drops the guy in a fight. So nice to see guys, you know, people going after the prize prospect in the system and his teammates sticking up for him. But, you know, Lysel is a little scrappy as well. So if he gets himself in those situations, he's not always going to get bailed out. So I hope he, you know, keeps in mind of that. But Nasty scored a couple goals, scoring the shootout. Georgi Mrkulov scoring the shootout, a crazy move. It was a good showing. It's a prospect challenge, so it's not something to buy into a ton, but I liked what I saw from the guys. I expected to be really good. Johnny Beecher cut some weight, looked really fast. He's just still got really good first step acceleration for such a big guy. I'm excited to see what he does this year. Training camp notes, looks like we're not going to have Carlo with Lindholm to start, which is interesting.
That's surprising.
We might see Lindholm and Zboril. This could easily just be a training camp look.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how much it extends into the season, because I like Zboril on the right side. I really do. Coming off of ACL surgery, I know, you know, Ryan Mougenel was talking about how jacked he looks. And he was good before that ACL surgery and the injury itself. But I don't like the idea of throwing Zboril on the first pairing right away.
Nah, build up to that. Like, you need some time to get back into game speed, get your legs back under, I feel like. So that's kind of a work in progress thing, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'd like to see them explore, like, 2-3 weeks in the season. Like, this, again, it could just be a training camp look. They're, you know, trying it with different guys, as, you know, he's, for large majority of the season, expected to be a guy, a left shot defenseman that plays on the right side. Montgomery also mentioned if needed, Grzelcyk and Riley can do that. But yeah, I think Zboril's the more natural fit given how he played there a lot last year on the right side. So we'll see. But I think at some point we will see Lindholm and Carlo, and with McAvoy to start the season, we could end up seeing that a lot depending on how camp goes. So that's going to be interesting to monitor. You know, on top of talking like guys about guys like Lysol and Beecher earlier, we'll see as camp goes on if they fight for a spot early on in the season or if they start in the AHL. Either way, cool with me. But interesting note to start. I mean, we'll see how the defensive core looks without Grzelcyk and McAvoy. It could just be something they try for a while and then we go back to a more normal look. I don't see this becoming a thing where, like, Zboril is a top four right shot defenseman when everybody is healthy. I think he'll go down to the third pairing. So I think they're just experimenting with things, but it could be something that becomes pretty feasible. And, you know, that's okay with me if it works. But I'd rather not see Zboril on the top pairing to start. That's just where I'm at. Figured I'd mention that. I think we're in the same boat. But we shall see what happens as things go along. First day of training camp today. They're talking about Pastrnak. They're hoping to get things done as soon as possible. So that's good. Pastrnak, in the past week since we last recorded, has expressed willingness. You know, he wants to be here. He's saying, like, this is where he became a man. Him and his partner, Rebecca, love it here. And I think with the unfortunate circumstances he's gone through in the last year, you know, dealing with the death of his son, I think it's fair that he kind of wants to just get back in the mix. And I don't think he's in a spot where, like, he's going to think it's the end of the world if they don't get something done before the season. Mm-hmm. But he's also, you know, Flutish and Zawa touched on this in one of his recent pieces. Like, he's just been trying to relax this offseason. It was a really tasking season for him. And I wonder if that goes into, you know, Sweeney's mindset too. Like, we want to get this done with Pastrnak, but we want to give him, you know, the space he needs if he needs it. You know, this is something with the tragic death of his son that is going to affect him for years. They need to, you know, take him, you know, every athlete has, like, an emotional side, but especially when something like this happens, you got to be really careful. You got to be mindful of things, and it's Pastrnak's needs first, you know, in this type of situation. Absolutely. But in general, like, you gotta prioritize the player and what they're comfortable with. And, I have faith that they can get something done early, but, you know, hopefully if this drags on in the season, they can, you know, keep Pastrnak long term whenever that is to happen. But they're hoping to get something done soon. So, like you, as I know, you know, any reasonable Bruins fan wants Pastrnak back as soon as possible.
Absolutely. He's pretty good at what he does.
The swing of things. So we'll see how things go with Pastrnak, and we'll see how things go in the preseason starting Sunday or Saturday. So we'll see how that pans out and how things go as I, you know, get my Bruins little tangent off before we get into some football. Celtics and Red Sox tidbits on the basketball and baseball side of things. So, yeah, I mean, Kevin Plawecki, I wasn't expecting, you know, he's having a tough season, but I wasn't expecting to see a release in kind of a weird fashion like they've done it for him.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, it's not the end of the world they released Kevin Plawecki, because like you said, he's the worst of the three catchers they have right now. It's the smart decision going with McGuire and Wong. They're better offensively. McGuire's been I've been completely wrong about him. He's been a great fit so far, defensively and offensively. Wong still up and coming. You want to see what you have in him, so it makes sense to keep him around. I just, the September, obviously you call guys up, so you want to get looks at different guys. I heard Lou Maloney say a lot of the times teams want to have a third catcher on the roster. That's why, you know, a lot of teams will call a third catcher up. And with, you know, the new CBA and everything, it's different on how teams go about September call-ups. You can't bring up the entire 40-man roster. It's only a couple of guys. DFA and Plawecki, though, with 2 weeks left in the season, with, you know, the amount of, I guess, problems this team has had internally this season. Obviously, we talked about it when they traded Vasquez, what that did to the clubhouse. There were rumors. I don't know how true they were. A lot of people seem to think they were blown out of proportion, that a lot of guys in the clubhouse weren't happy with the Plawecki DFAing. I don't understand it. he's a free agent at the end of the year, I'm pretty sure. So you're not going to bring him back. I don't get why you wouldn't ride it out with them. Especially over some other guys on the roster. Like if you want to DFA a guy to bring Frank Herman, who was one of their better pitchers in Worcester this season, who did not pitch well in his major league debut, didn't record a single out. If you wanted to bring him up so badly, like Ryan Brazier, who we've talked about a little bit this season, like everybody, the consensus is, why does he still have a job here? You want to get rid of a position player like Abraham Almonte is 33 years old. I don't know what he's taking a roster spot up for. He was already, I think, DFA'd once this season and no one wanted him. You got him as a free agent, so I would have to assume he'd probably pass through waivers again if you DFA'd him a second time. I can't imagine teams are looking for a 33-year-old outfielder with 2 weeks left to go in the season. So the Plucky thing just didn't make a ton of sense to me. It's another move that like you kind of scratch your head at this season with a season full of them. Because I feel like at this point, again, he's a free agent at the end of the year. Just ride it out with them. Let the guy walk off at the end of the year. You're not going to pay him. You're not going to bring him back. To DFA him this late in the season, like, I don't know if there's any teams looking for a third catcher right now with 2 weeks to go. So his season's probably done. I thought there was some rumors maybe that the Rangers were interested in him. Maybe they bring him in. But again, it was a weird move. The timing was weird. The handling of it was weird because it kind of came out of nowhere. Like there weren't really any rumblings of anything of a roster move to be made. And then after the game a couple nights ago, that was just put out there on Twitter, like, hey, Kevin Plawecki's getting DFA'd. All right, that comes out of nowhere. So yeah, again,
it was so buried. It was so buried.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's wasn't
didn't know it was until a Thursday the next night.
Well, that's what I mean. I feel like it came out like last Thursday night during like one of the football games, or there was something else going on that, like you said, it kind of just slid under the radar. It was after the Red Sox game, so maybe it was that. But again, like I'm not going to complain too much about it because it's not the worst. Like it's not a guy you're going to really, really miss. But again, just the way it was handled, and again, with how late in the season it comes, why you're DFAing a guy that was clearly liked in the clubhouse. Again, it falls into the Vasquez thing. A guy that was, again, well-liked, veteran guy, good in the clubhouse. You could have held on to him for the final week and a half, and then just, again, send him on his way at the end of the season, not re-sign him, have him go somewhere else. But just another weird move by the Red Sox in a season that's been full of weird moves and head-scratching moves. And, again, I saw Chaim Bloom getting flamed a little bit for it, but there were some reports that were conflicting that, like, guys weren't that – or they were upset, but it wasn't anything egregious like people maybe thought it was at the start. And there wasn't like any revolt or anything. Like guys weren't pissed at management, or like I saw reports of that. Like I can't imagine that's all that true.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp of like, why couldn't you have written it out? Like you're not making the playoffs. Like who cares? It's a guy that, as far as I know, is well liked.
He was the guy that came up with the cart thing. Now they have no one to push the cart for home runs. Yeah, like
what the fuck? That's the biggest travesty of it.
Yeah.
All. I saw the guy get to double-digit RBIs the one game I went to this year. Like, geez, now I just have to remember for getting DFA'd. Thanks a lot, Chaim.
Yep. Way to go.
I don't know. I get it. Like, they want to get clear a spot for Wong, and McGuire's been good even though, you know, he's a pervert. But
true. That is, like, 100% confirmed.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things that just really wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have mentioned in the outline here, too, like, Brazier, Almonte, and Hernandez have freaking roster spots. Ryan Brazier has, like, maybe been one of the worst pitchers in the league this year.
I don't think he can, disagree with that. Stat-wise, like, got to be.
Oh, man, like, it's just weird. It was kind of unnecessary. And like we talked about, it felt kind of buried.
Mm-hmm. That's the typical Red Sox news. Just kind of hide it under something and hope nobody sees it. But, again, is it the worst move on the planet? No, I don't want to harp on it too much. But, again, I can't go without saying, this late in the season, what are you doing? Like, just ride it out.
It is weird.
That's how they operate now, though. They kind of make you go, what is that move for? What are you doing?
Yeah, like, everything feels like it has something more to it, like it's pissing someone off. Like, it's what a travesty this year has been for the team. Speaking of a travesty in another way, the Robert Williams news, just the guy can't catch a break.
Talk about something that came out of nowhere. Too. Yeah,
like there were reports as things kind of went on, like, oh, he's playing at full health, and we didn't buy it. Like,
he was playing at full health.
There's no fucking way, man. Mm-hmm. Not even just for what he's dealt with. Like you said, you can see it in his movements a lot of times too. He was not fully healthy.
No,
I hope, you know, the fact that this is before the season, it doesn't really linger too much this year. They nip it in the bud. But it just sucks. The guys had so many knee problems. It's insane. And I hope This squashes things for a while and hopefully, you know, for a very long period of time. But you never know, unfortunately, with Rob Williams, the troubles he's had with his knees in particular. Yeah, just really unfortunate, but glad they got it done before.
Exactly. It's, you hope it's something they get out in front of. They seemingly have their, I saw a report today, they're not going to dip back into the free agent market to bring in any sort of veteran center. I know Dwight Howard's name was thrown around, LaMarcus Aldridge, we talked about him at the start of the offseason. Just as a body, I think I saw they're going to bring in maybe another overseas guy just to compete for that final roster spot. But it stinks because that's something we talked about going into the offseason, or coming out of the offseason rather, and talking about leading into the season. The big thing was going to be, you know, you have more depth at the start of the season, so your depth isn't going to be tested right out of the gate like it was last year. And you kind of fall back in that now with the Gallinari injury. You have this injury to Williams, who I think the report said he's not going to miss a ton of time. He'll miss all of training camp, obviously, and maybe the first week or so of the season. That's best case scenario. But again, it stinks because now your depth, like I said, is going to be tested again. Al Horford's probably going to play more minutes than you maybe want him to at the start of the year. And you're going to have to rely on maybe some of these more unproven guys. And, you know, whoever ends up taking that last roster spot for a big man to see what they can bring to the table.
The murder cornet.
The what cornet?
The murder cornet.
Gotcha. Took me a second.
The murder cornet.
It's probably going to fall to him. I mean, he's really the only other center, or true center on the roster right now. You're going to see more Grant Williams, obviously, but he's more so a power forward or a four more than anything else. So comes down to 35, 36-year-old Al, whatever he's up to now, and Luke Cornett, who, you know, is a solid guy to bring in off the bench in blowouts. And we'll see him get more minutes, and hopefully he can shine in those.
Yeah, speaking of Grant Williams, maybe he's the next guy we see in the news. Maybe they get an extension done with him soon. I saw people speculating about that. So maybe we'll see that down the road.
Wouldn't be the worst thing.
Wouldn't mind that at all. On to Patriots, though, and football. Well, I mean, they beat the Steelers.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
That's good. That's good. It was a gross game, like we expected, but they beat the Steelers. But
0-17 is off the table.
0-17 is off the table. But before we get to that, a little bit of surprise, like not really in terms of the player, but like offensive line is a tough week, then a bounce back week. And Justin Herron is sent to be with Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler in Las Vegas. It's one of those classic trades we see so many of nowadays, with like a seventh and a sixth round pick swap as well. Their 2024 picks, because the Patriots already swapped late round picks in the Jarrett Stidham trade. So they had to swap other late round picks. But yeah, Justin Herron is now a member of the Raiders, I guess. Maybe they got rid of Leatherwood and they felt like they needed some depth. Maybe they want Justin Herron. Maybe McDaniel saw something he liked in him and or Ziegler. So that happens. It kind of stinks. You know, I think Justin Herron was okay at times. He also had some bonehead moments, so it's not the end of the world. But Justin Herron is the newest Las Vegas Raider. And Terrence Mitchell signed off the practice squad of the Patriots by Tennessee. So
that wasn't a surprise either. I kind of figured that was kind of like when they – re-sign him in the offseason or re-sign him after obviously the roster cuts and put him on the practice squad. I'm like, there's no way this guy sticks for long. Like, he's obviously not the greatest player on the planet, but like has plenty of NFL experience. You know, he's a guy that's been out there for a while. Like, some team either is going to have to deal with injuries or just take him as, you know, a depth guy. And that's obviously what the Titans do here.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, we'll see if he's in the mix with the Titans. It's not the biggest deal though. I mean, they're in a different spot depth wise with the line this year, and you know, a tough start in terms of the performance in week one. So you might be a little bit more worried about the line than you were in the past. But they move on from Herron. He didn't even play in the first two games, so maybe this was, you know, maybe that was an omen in a way, or maybe McDaniels came calling after week two and they worked something out. I don't know, or Ziegler in this case, but like you had mentioned, I remember Mike Reese bringing this up early in the week, like, look out for a move that might free up space for Daniel Equaley, who came back off a two-game suspension. Then right when the trade came out, Mike Reese tweeting that out. So maybe it was because of that. It could be a multitude of different things, but just a minor trade that, for whatever reason, they felt they needed to get done and got done. So
Marcus Cannon's still on the practice squad too. So
that too.
So maybe that's we'll something to keep an eye on. I can't imagine he stays on the practice squad for long. Like,
yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, maybe McDaniels and Ziegler just see something they like, or they liked in New England and they want him in the mix. So maybe he's just a rotational guy there. We'll see what happens for Justin Herron in Las Vegas. But 17-14, gross score, gross win.
Yep.
Wasn't a super exciting game at some moments, but they don't ask how, they ask how many, and that's the scenario here. The Patriots are 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. It's a good start. It's a good gritty win to prepare them for another AFC North test, which we'll get to a little bit later with the Ravens coming up. But shall we get into studs and duds and stuff?
I think we shall. We'll do it the same way we did last week. Run through the three studs, run through the three duds, convene, and talk about what we think. I'll start with my number three stud. Maybe no surprise, people that know me and listen, I'm going to be very boring. And I'm going with Matt Judon again. Four tackles, one sack, a tackle for a loss, one quarterback hit, and one pass defended against. Great play there on the ball he batted away from Najee Harris. If you go back and watch that play, Steelers kind of ran a pick play on it a little bit. I think it was Pickens watching the replay, kind of took off and was maybe looking to get Judon and Mills crashing into each other. Judon did a good job to step around that and go track that ball down on Harris on the kind of little wheel route they run. And then the Trubisky sack, he chased him down. Trubisky at the end kind of got confused if he wanted to continue to run or go out of bounds, because that's Mitch Trubisky and he's maybe not the smartest quarterback on the planet. But good job by Judon to stay with him anyway and not get faked out by whatever kind of little dance Trubisky was trying to do on that play. Solid day again for Matt Judon, though.
Yeah, it was. One of the funniest things that stood about the game to me, it was just, I don't remember what the play was, but he was on the left side of the line going up against whoever on that side of the line. And he's just battling, and Trubisky was like moving around in the pocket a little bit to the opposite side. And Judon just did like a spin move off of whoever was blocking him, then just kind of stood there. It was really weird. I was like, okay.
He got just staring him down, like, what are you going
to do? He just stopped moving. I was like, okay. Yeah, all right. That was kind of goofy.
The controller disconnected.
Yeah, maybe it did, honestly. Yeah. He had a good game. I mean, it's a good start. But I hate to be this guy, but I hope – I'm just like, every time I see Judon do good now, I'm going to be like, is this going to –
You're waiting for the drop-off? Yeah.
Because it happened last year, but hopefully, you know, at least if it happens, we have another, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of pretty good play ahead of
us. Exactly.
So hopefully all 17. So that would be really nice.
That would be great.
Yeah. Number three stud for me is a guy that is perfect on my stud list in his young career, and it's Cole Strange. He was really good in stopping Cam Hayward.
Excellent in stopping Cam Hayward from the videos I saw.
Very formidable and helped shore up that left side of the line that, you know, not really on him as much, but had some trouble in week one. It was huge, and I think it was a big reason why. I think Mac Jones looked more comfortable. It wasn't a perfect game for Mac Jones, but I think the offense looked a little less skittish, more so than it did against Miami in week one. I think Cole Strange was a big part of that, and he's worthy of stud consideration here.
I think so. I mean,
been really good. Really good.
Yeah, so. I'll absolutely take it. You still have a couple hiccups here and there. You expect that as a rookie, and then obviously bounces back from the one quarter couple of drives benching that he had in week one. So good performance from him all around.
Yeah, really good. Really good.
We have, I believe, the same one and two studs. Yep. We do, so we'll start with number two.
Can I switch it up? But there's no way to do
it. They're the two go-tos. It's Myers for number two. Anybody who watched the game is going to guess who our number one is, but we'll start with Myers. 9 receptions on 13 targets. That led all Patriots. 95 yards. That was second when it came to the receivers. An average of 10.6 when it came to those receptions. Myers was excellent all day. He was the go-to guy all game for Mac Jones, converted 3 third downs. They were pretty hefty third downs as well, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 4, and 3rd and 9. He got 8, 16, and 15 yards respectively on those. Almost converted 2 more third downs, 2 massive third downs. 3rd and 16, he got 14 on, and 3rd and 26, he got 24 on. That 3rd and 16, I mentioned, was negated on a holding penalty, and then the 3rd and 26 was the next play. Like I said, go-to guy, Mac Jones, clearly comfortable with Jacoby Myers. He's not afraid to get contact, you know, makes the catch and puts his head down, did that a couple times throughout Sunday's game. He was excellent, his best game, obviously 2 games so far this season, but probably the best performance, maybe you could argue the next guy out of any Patriot receiver this season so far.
Yeah, and it's another week for me where he's definitely the guy I feel most comfortable seeing Mac.
Absolutely, yep.
So glad that
if they're not going to put Kendrick Bourne on the field, then exactly. Jacoby Myers is the go-to guy. Like, makes too much sense. Hopefully he just doesn't miss a meeting or come in 5 minutes late and then he ends up in Mac Patricia's doghouse too. That wouldn't be great.
Yeah, that wouldn't be great.
Yep.
Number one, it's a guy I wouldn't have expected to be number one this week, but had his best game as a Patriot. So
yeah, Nelson Agholor, 6 for 6 when it came to receptions and targets, 110 yards. Got to think that's somewhere near career high for him. It's definitely a Patriot high for him. Had the big touchdown that he bailed Mac Jones out on. I'll get to Mac Jones in a second. He was the highest graded Patriot via Pro Football Focus with an 86.6 grade. Just a great game. Again, anytime he was called on, made the catch, made it look easy a lot of the time. Like I said, helped out Mac Jones on a ball that was not the greatest thrown ball. But anything else to add on Nelson Aguilar's day?
The touchdown was nasty. It was kind of messy. You know, it was a messy touchdown. It was tough.
Very messy.
Yeah. But got it done. I mean, that's a huge moment for him. A guy that's had kind of a turbulent offseason. You know, there are trade rumors and questions about if he's going to be around for long or if he's going to have a role. But big day. Perfect on his targets, caught every ball thrown his way, and had a huge touchdown in a close game. You got to put him at number one, 100-yard receiving game, 110 to be exact. Great game.
Absolutely. Really good.
And I like Mac Jones taking advantage of a mismatch here because Nelson Aguilar is not like an elite receiver or anything, but him on Witherspoon there deep is, I think, a mismatch versus a guy like Levi Wallace or somehow Minkah Fitzpatrick, who was largely on Devontae Parker. But yeah, it's a different story. If it's probably getting picked, if it's Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And Akello Witherspoon, not trying to shit on him, but, you know, it's a mismatch. It's one that Aguilar can win, and I'm glad they took advantage of it because it was the biggest play of the game. So
absolutely. It was one of the defining plays, or one of two maybe. On to the dud side of things, like I said, I'll get to Mac Jones in a second. I'm getting to him now. He is my number three dud. Had some moments here and there, like you said, the big play to Aguilar obviously got people out of their seats, but not a great thrown ball, 21 for 35. 252 yards, a touchdown. Another egregious interception. Could have had two with maybe one of the worst plays we've ever seen Mac Jones make for a guy that has been kind of heralded as a pretty smart decision maker and pretty accurate with his passing. The throwing against his body to who was that going through? I think it was Cam Sutton. Yeah, it was Cam Sutton that just dropped it. Mac Jones threw that right to him. The poor home run ball again for Devontae Parker, which I think that's the only play they have in the playbook for Devontae Parker, is just chuck it up and hope to God he makes the catch. Kind of like I said, watching the game, you know, they're doing the effort Jamar Chase is down there somewhere type of pass, and it just hasn't worked out so far. But just not a great game from him. He had the pass too to Hunter Henry. I don't know if you put it on Henry, if you put it on Jones, the one he threw to, I think it was his back shoulder, and Henry wasn't even looking at the football. So some miscommunications there. Like
it was a little bit on both. Like Henry didn't turn around soon enough, but like that also could have been because he was expecting it later. But it
was, I think they said that on the broadcast too. They're like, you expect that ball towards the sideline more. And he kind of threw it more so for whoever the corner was on Henry at the time to try to make a play on that. But not a great game from Jones. Like you said, that kind of stinks to see because the offensive line was better in this game than the Miami game. He had more time to throw. And there was just some questionable decisions from him. And maybe that comes down to play calling. But who knows? How's your confidence level on Mac Jones right now? I've seen some people that are kind of wavering to start the year on him.
I'm fine on Mac Jones. Also worth noting in that play that picked to Fitzpatrick, he thought there was going to be roughing the passer. Reasonable case for it, not in like the practicality standpoint, but with how things are trending, roughing the passer comes on pretty light, somewhat late contact sometimes. True. Sometimes it's warranted, sometimes like, do they really have to call that more and more with time, I think. But I'm not blown away by Mac Jones right now, but like, I'm not really concerned about whether he's the guy or not. Like some people, I'm fine with Mac right now. He's not blowing me away, like I said, but I'm fine with Mac. I think he's, you know, doing enough, but I think I would like to see it hit another level, but it's early. It's a new offense. It's tough for a second year player getting used to things and getting used to a hopefully new number one receiver who hasn't worked out so far yet. And Devontae Parker, he's got some things to figure out. I think he'll be fine. And hopefully he can do that in the earlier part of the season where the schedule is much easier than the later part. So, and he's cool, calm, and collected. I don't really like see anything about his demeanor to worry about. Like after the game, he says the one interception wasn't good by me. We'll get that cleaned up. Okay, cool. Like let's move
there
on.
You go.
Short memory. So, yeah, I'm not one of the people like freaking out about Mac Jones right now. Do I think there's more and do I think he can be better? Yeah. Do I want him to be better? Absolutely. But like, you know, I'm kind of just like, he's fine. He's not doing anything to blow me away, but he's fine right now.
Gotcha.
And, you know, there's still much plenty of time for him to get better. And yeah, I kind of thought it was an okay game with some tough decisions, and he's not, spoiler alert, not in my dud section, but I get why you put him in there. Mm-hmm. My number three dud is Jalen Mills, which will surprise some people because he had a pick, but I think the pick was kind of a layup.
Yeah, did he though? I'd put that pick more so for Mack Wilson than I would for Jalen Mills.
You know, he caught in the breadbasket, good on him to be there, but I don't know. I thought things were a little easy for Deontay Johnson at times.
At times, yep.
You know, it's not like he was getting blown away every time, but I just think he could have tightened things up on Deontay Johnson a little bit. Not like a horrible game. You know, it's not like Deontay Johnson had like 100 yards either. He had 6 catches, 57 yards. But yeah, I feel like every time I saw him on TV, he was getting beat. Deontay Johnson was adding to his stat sheet against him. I mean, Johnson's pretty good. I think he's getting pretty close to establishing himself like firmly as the number one receiver there. I still think it's kind of like a gray area. Kind of Claypool can have big games. Like Pickens is going to have big games. And of course, this is the first year without Juju Smith-Schuster in the mix. So it's kind of like a new landscape in the receiver room there. So yeah, but I don't know. It might be controversial because of the pick, pass deflection. He had 4 tackles, 2 assists, 6 combined tackles. But I don't know. I put him in as my number three dud. You know, maybe people agree with me, maybe people won't, but I was kind of lukewarm on him. I think he could have been better, but you know, not like a game where he like absolutely sucked, but I don't know. We'll see. If, you know,
not as bad as week one, but still not great.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from. I gotcha. My number two dud again, pretty good day for the offensive line, but this was kind of the one standout poor performers. Was Isaiah Wynn. According to Evan Lazar, he had 4 hurries. I believe that led all offensive linemen for the Patriots, had a holding and a false start penalty. And from Greg Bedard, he said, Patriots allowed 10 quarterback pressures in the first half versus the Steelers, despite 1 true blitz. Wynn allowed 5.5. Not a great day for Isaiah Wynn. Again, you like that the offensive line has improved from week one, but again, Isaiah Wynn's a pretty important guy. There was one play, too, I think, listening to the radio broadcast coming home from work on Sunday. He missed a block, I think, on a pass over the middle, maybe to Jonnu Smith. And Zoe kind of got on him for that, saying that he didn't get out there quick enough to get the block down. So kind of nitpicking. Again, the offensive line as a whole played pretty good. He, you know, Wynn performed better, I think, as the game went on. But, you know, when you have these stats like the hurries and the pressures to back up, putting him on the dud list, I think it's well warranted.
Yeah, I kind of have him as, like, I didn't write it down the outline, but kind of an honorable mention. Between, like, him and my number one and two studs and duds, or well, duds in this case. I kind of went back and forth on all three of them. Maybe Jonnu Smith should have been my honorable mention, but yeah, I had Jonnu Smith as my number two dud. 3 targets and nothing.
I think you could group both tight ends into that. Hunter Henry.
I would like to see the tight ends get involved more. I don't really get what the disconnect was here. And I was hoping for the start of the season as a whole, we'd see Hunter Henry with a couple touchdowns by now because he's one of the best red zone tight ends in the league last year. But that hasn't been the case.
It is confusing. Like, they get down to the red zone and like to pass the ball to Damian Harris for some reason. Like,
it's weird. Like, use your tight ends in the red zone. I don't really get it. But yeah, he couldn't really do anything with his 3 targets. I thought he was worthy of mention. You can kind of group him in a hybrid here. Like, he could be the honorable mention. He could be the number two stud. Number two dud. He could be the number three dud.
He's getting on there somehow. This week.
Yeah, he's getting on there somehow, whether it's the honorable mention or not. They're all kind of grouped into, like, one amalgamation for me this week. I'll say
gotcha.
It's weird,
fair.
But
fair
it was
enough.
A weird game. It was a slow game, so.
It was. It was a very boring game at times. Consensus number one, though, this one, I think no questions asked when it comes to being number one on the dud list. It's Devontae Parker. 2nd week in a row with absolutely nothing. 0 receptions on 2 targets for 0 yards. Like I said, they tried the effort, Jamar Chase down there somewhere play. And once again, Mac Jones was picked off. I don't get, like you said, Devontae Parker is probably the one on the depth chart. You're going to get the best corner on the other team guarding him or defending him. That's not a matchup to keep throwing the deep ball on. Like, you had Minkah Fitzpatrick this week. You had Xavien Howard last week. Like, those are 2 guys who are well-established professionals in the league. You're not picking on some scrubs here, so I don't get why that's the play call. And like I said, that seems to be the only play they run with Devontae Parker, is just chuck it downfield and hope he gets the 50-50 ball. Played the 2nd most snaps for a receiver behind only behind Jacoby Myers. Parker played 52 snaps. Myers play 56. This is from Zach Cox on Twitter. He said, connection between Parker and Jones just has not been there thus far. One catch for 9 yards and 109 offensive snaps with two targets intercepted. You expect more from a guy they go out and trade for who is supposed to be the number one. And when you haven't been able to get anything connection with him wise, not great. You're gonna end up on the dud list more so than not.
Yeah, some blame's gonna fall on him. Like, it's not all. Like, it's
true.
Gonna be on Mac Jones partially too. They're still working on their connection,
mm-hmm.
And figuring things out on the fly. But yeah, they gotta try and like get him across the middle a little more. Maybe
do something other than just go downfield and I'll try to hit you. Yeah, like,
they try to get him towards the sidelines, you know, something else. But it just, whatever it is, I'm not gonna act like I'm the mastermind of the Patriots offense right now, but like, there is a way to get Devontae Parker open more,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it just takes the right matchup. Maybe it, you know, maybe it starts this week. Maybe, you know, whoever's on him, they figure something out. But right now, it's kind of hard to be optimistic. I'm not like on the it's all over for Devontae Parker train or anything, but like,
mm-hmm. there's, it's not looking great though.
To get open, there's got to be ways for the, you know, the play calling of the team to allow him to get open more,
mm-hmm.
and there's got to be better ways for Mac Jones to find him. So. Yeah, but it comes back to, like, he's getting primo coverage all the time, too. So that's where you got to kind of cut him some slack. But it's been a tough season for Devontae Parker. And, you know, you got to kind of have context to his pretty much non-existent start of the season because it sucks. But, like, there are more layers to it than to just be like, oh, he sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a tough start to him. And I think he's worthy of, you know, being the duds list sadly this week. But do I have a ton of faith in it working out consistently given the play calling structure? Not really.
It's not great so far. Like,
but like, I don't know. He's a good enough player and, you know, they have enough faith in him given what they gave up for him and, mm-hmm. you know, his reputation in the past to hopefully, you know, give us some hope that this will work. So
yeah, like you said, so just change up the play calls once, maybe send Jacoby Myers, maybe put Kendrick Bourne in the game and send him on that deep route. And maybe, like you said, just throw a slant over the middle to Parker, just maybe get him comfortable, you know, get him the feeling of what it's like to catch a pass and, you know, maybe go for some extra yardage instead of just trying to jump over a defender here and there on a couple of deep balls that just have not worked out. Maybe have Nelson Agholor be the deep guy now. If that seemed to work out once, he kind of bailed Mac Jones out. So maybe you switch his and Devontae Parker's roll up a little bit just for one game, just to see if it works.
There are ways to figure this out, and I hope they
find. You would think, message. Yep.
That is the message.
But
other takeaways, what do we want to get to first?
Really, the one kind of big, I've seen some people discuss this. I think Felger was one of the big ones that talked about, you know, the one big play of the game was the Olszewski muff punt. You know, the Steelers screw up a punt. The Patriots get away with their screwed up punt. And he argued that was kind of the only thing that won you this game. I don't think that's that far-fetched. Like, again, there were some improvements in this game that kind of groups into the biggest question of, you know, has anything really been answered from this game to, or from the Miami game to this game, rather. You're, like we said, the offensive line did take a step forward. They were pretty good when it came to closing the game out along with the running backs. Are you getting feedback or something on?
Something with the fan.
Okay. I mean, like I said, there were some improvements. The offensive line was good. The run game, therefore, was good as well. Defense, you know, how much can you take away with that? You're playing Mitch Trubisky, who, good luck to the Steelers. Like, that's that offense.
Trubisky, maybe Kenny Pickett.
They need to go to Pickens within the next couple of games. Thank you.
Wrong pick.
I've done that multiple times. The fact that they have both of them, it aggravates me that I talk about the receiver and the quarterback. You talk about Deontay Johnson, you're waiting for him to break out. I think, you know, a quarterback change would help that out a lot.
Claypool,
but like that too. Was
Claypool hasn't done like a
yeah, that's what I mean. He's yeah, kind of non-existent or definitely was in the game. But that was kind of like the big thing for me. Like you have all these kind of minor improvements, but you get a gift when it comes to your old guy. And people were making the jokes that Gunnar Stoll on the Patriots payroll. You know, he muffs that punt to the 20. You get the unnecessary roughness penalty on Connor Hayward to go along with it that puts the ball at the 10. The Harris touchdown that ends up coming after that play is the one that wins you the game. It made it 17-6. You win the game 17-14. So how much can you read into some of these improvements when you're getting a gift like this and, you know, you get away with the idiotic, you know, Miles Bryant could have been on the duds list for me or an honorable mention, at least just for how stupid he was trying to Willie Mays that ball on the punt that he had at the start of the game. So How are you feeling? Are you, I have to assume you're more confident than you were coming out of the Miami game, but are you like me where it's like, we talked about this with, you know, the Jets matchups last year. How much do these wins, you know, really show you when it's, you know, you look at the competition you're playing and the breaks you're getting with Gunnar Muff on the punt?
Yeah, it has me taking things with a grain of salt, and especially like going, we'll talk about the Ravens more. Like, Ravens have been playing good, so like, you have a much tougher test than Mitch Trubisky. It's an upgrade at Lamar Jackson, a guy who's not only very good in the past, he's proven he's playing for a lot.
Playing like an MVP right now, the way he's
financial
going.
Status. So, yeah, I mean, spoiler alert, kind of don't love the Patriots odds next week, but we'll talk about that more in specifics. But the funniest thing to me, I feel like nobody really like picked up on this that much. I could be wrong, but like Gunnar Olszewski was laughing when that happened.
Was he?
Yeah, he like.
I didn't see
he,
that.
Like, smiled. He was like laughing. I was like,
"Oh, was it one of those like Aroldis Chapman things where he's like laughing after he gives up the walk off home run?" To, or it was kind of like, "Ah, I fucked that up." Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, I mean, that was. I didn't realize until going back weird. And look at. Going back and look at it on Twitter, that the Steelers didn't even have enough guys on the field. Like Brandon Schooler was completely uncovered on that. The people were joking that Jake Bailey should have just turned and thrown him the football and gotten the first down instead of hoping for the muff punt from Gunner. Like, so again, the Patriots capitalized on a complete miscue from the Steelers as a whole, and that ends up being the difference of the game. Like, I don't know how much you can, like I said, you can really take away with it. I'm with you that you're kind of taking this one with a grain of salt because, you know, it wasn't great. But the Steelers were just so bad, and it seems like every aspect of the game that really, I feel like you really can't take a ton away from this game.
Yeah, and like one thing I talked about last week, I expected Najee Harris to have a bigger game. And if he does, like, you're losing this game.
Absolutely, I think so, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if he was hindered by his injury, but.
But yeah, that had to have been part of it. Like, even though he's very confident, like, you don't just magically not feel a foot injury a week after.
Absolutely, yeah. As a running back,
that could have kept you out of this week. I don't know. I say foot injury because I don't remember specifically what it was.
It was an ankle, wasn't it?
I don't remember. I think it was something with his foot. I don't even think it was
maybe. I don't know. Ankle, whatever, foot, same area.
Yeah, same area, same difference. But yeah, I think, you know, I'm nitpicking here, but like, this game could have went a lot worse if Najee Harris could have done more. Like,
I think if you have a legitimate quarterback for the Steelers, yeah,
or if
like,
they have Kenny Pickett in, maybe they win this game. I don't know. Yeah. Like, but a win's a win. But yeah, they got lucky with the unnecessary roughness penalty, the muff punt, and you know that's that. But a win's a win. So hopefully that this galvanizes them a little bit, inspires some confidence, and you know, hopefully they're not hoping for a Gunnar Olszewski moment where he's laughing as he gets hit in the face of the punt to help them win the game. But, like, I don't know what else it would be. Like, I couldn't tell if he was outright laughing, but, like, he actually, like, smiled. So I have to imagine, you're like, huh. Like, oh, a little bit something like that. Like, oh, yeah. Shit. Like, it was funny. It was the first thing I noticed.
I'm just glad all the people that were high on the Gunnar Olszewski train for the Patriots, you know, that's what this guy is. Like, he's not that good. He had one week where he was what? Offensive special teams player of the week, and everyone was like, oh, Gunnar's the best. No, this guy's incredibly mediocre and yeah. Not good. So that was funny to see. All the people be like, oh, where's all the Gunnar supporters and defenders? Like,
yeah, I think a lot of the Gunnar support was ironic, but a
little bit, yeah, I could see that. But
who knows, man.
You got a gift. That's really,
we got a lot to get to still.
Well, just other than that, like I said, it kind of grouped in the Gunner thing with, you know, the just how you're feeling after this game type of thing. But again, like Kendrick Bourne does see an uptick in play. Had 2 receptions, 3 targets, 16 yards. Again, found it funny that as soon as he's in the ball game, that's where Mac Jones is going. Like, I don't think there's any. Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's any sort of coincidence there. Played 24 offensive snaps, 35%. Was still the least out of any wide receivers. Lil Jordan Humphrey played 26 snaps. That was obviously more. Again, like.
So just stop. It has to end in week 3. It has to.
You would think, but.
It's different. It's a different story if Devontae Parker is doing more. But you need to try and get other people in different, like, maybe the similar type of looks. Like you were saying, like, Devontae Parker's getting him once in a while. Or just mix things up to hopefully get him open. Because you're not playing Mitch Trubisky next week. You're playing a guy that is
playing legit quarterback
and could win another one. Will he? I don't think so. But He could. He's like literally
very good chance of
it because he's not only, you know, a guy that can get them through the air. He's one of those guys that fits the mold of so many QBs now in this game that can really change a game with the ball in their hands, running it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Kyler Murray level, 84 yards in the backfield scrambling, but like a guy that can win it not only because his prowess through the air, but can take over the game by himself. Mm-hmm. And if you don't tighten things up, like the Ravens are going to beat the Patriots.
Oh, they're going to walk away with this game. Unless they just forget how to play defense for the final quarter like they did against Miami. That's always a possibility.
Yeah, that is possible.
But that's the thing, too, is like you need speed to beat this Baltimore team. And Kendrick Bourne is pretty damn fast. And he's a guy that Mac Jones has been able to connect on deep balls with in the past. Like you said, maybe you switch it up a little bit. Like I'd be playing him over Parker right now with the production they've put out there. I know Bourne, we've talked about, hasn't been out there a ton. But when he has been, it's been effective. Devontae Parker hasn't been, like – usually in the past with the Bill Belichick teams, the guy that's producing is the guy that's being put out on the field, and the guy that isn't is taking a seat. But it seems like they want to go in a different direction. You know, maybe Kendrick Bourne is still in Matt Patricia's quote-unquote doghouse for whatever reason, which is still just an absolute, you know, laughing stock of a thing. But that's, again, my big thing. Like, more Kendrick Bourne would be nice. The Patriots kind of get away with one, get some gifts, and are able to take, like you said, a confidence booster win. But how much stock do you really put into that?
Tough to put a ton in. Like, mm-hmm. We hate to be the Debbie Downers here in a way, but just being realistic,
nope.
It's a much tougher contest coming up. So,
mm-hmm.
That is something we can't just gloss over. So,
absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well get to other thoughts around the league before we get to said game against the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't like a crazy week in the same sense as week one.
I was going to say definitely not compared to week one, but
yeah, definitely some interesting games throughout week two.
Mm-hmm.
Chargers and Chiefs on Thursday. This is the Justin Herbert game to me. I mean, I can't believe that he played the way he did at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. One play, he literally like couldn't play at full strength, and he just kind
of
like
flipped it out of bounds, right? Yeah,
flailed the ball over because like his ribs were in shambles.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how that affects him coming into this week. It was good to see Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, even though, you know, people are talking about like Patrick Mahomes is one of those games where like it magnifies for people for whatever their reasons may be. Like, he's one of these guys that's really good and makes these crazy plays, but like he gets bailed out by people fucking up interceptions attempts.
Yeah. Yep. He even said it himself that like we kind of got away with one there. Like, it's just, it's kind of how the Chiefs have
that's
gone.
Scary in a way, because like if he actually does reel it in and keep his unbelievable abilities, we're just going to see a practically flawless Patrick Mahomes.
Pretty much. Like,
which is not fun.
Very scary. Yep.
Don't play the Chiefs this year, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Given the, you know, the Chiefs being on the rise all these years. But yeah, Chargers and Chiefs, I was hoping it'd be like a Miami Baltimore score.
Yeah.
But still
didn't
good game.
Really. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for
Justin
the first
Herbert doing what he did at the end of the game was ridiculous to put points on the board.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. I don't know how you can consider somebody day to day when they have fractured rib cartilage and had to have it removed. Like, how do you?
Yeah, that's
just ridiculous. A different animal, I guess.
It's
but
different when it comes to players like that magnitude too. Like, if it's just a normal guy somewhere else on the team, they might be like, "Oh, he's out for like 2 to 4 weeks." But
absolutely,
he's a franchise quarterback, one of the best QBs in the league. Like, they're gonna get him back if they can.
He was my pick for MVP. Damn it.
Yeah, and he's
can't be having him go out in week two. Like,
yep.
Yeah, that's not good. But, yeah, that's kind of my big thing from that game is will that linger for the Chargers? Obviously off to a solid start. Probably should be 2-0, but
yeah, that pick six was tough.
Pick six doomed him. Like,
the whole thing with Everett and being gassed. And like, yep. I think Everett should Herbert should have known that to an extent too. But, like, I don't know. It's a little bit on the coaching staff, a little bit on Everett, a little bit on Herbert, and it ends, like, with a rookie running it back like 100 yards for pick six.
Yeah, it's tough.
Whole game. That's, yeah, it's tough. I wish it didn't end like that. I was hoping for like an OT game or more points on the board.
Nope.
But still a good game. I mean, the Chiefs winning, you get down to a 3-point margin for final. It's a good game. So it just
absolutely
sucks the way it ended for Herbert. And I'm glad it didn't lead to anything that is going to keep him out long term, knock on wood, but it doesn't look that way for now. speaking of the game we kind of alluded to for a sec, Dolphins and Ravens. Look, I'm just going to put it out there. Super outlandish, but, like, I did not expect to ever see Tua Tagovailoa ever throw six touchdowns in a game.
Going
to
say, is Tua the guy? There was a lot of talk about Tua sucking 2 weeks ago and, you know, not being the guy in Miami, and now he comes out and throws for six touchdowns and leads a massive fourth-quarter comeback.
I think it's, like, hard to not be the guy. I think he's proving that with Hill and Waddle. So I think for that reason, he is the guy.
I'm
giving him credit for definitely improving, but I think having Hill and Waddle
after a
full year of Waddle,
yep,
you know, learning the system, even though, you know, they have a new coach, and, like, he's going to have a breakout season now versus having him as a rookie last year. Mm-hmm. And now having Hill,
it makes things a lot easier. Yep.
I'm not calling Tua the guy yet. I think he's on pace to be the guy? Yeah, I'd say so right now, but, like, I need to see more. I need to see
it. I think he's better than a lot of people give him credit for. My big thing is, like, they have the Bills coming, either coming in or they're going there this week. I can't remember where the matchup is. Not, you know, if he can go toe-to-toe with Allen, that's one thing. If he can just keep that game competitive, like, I think then you have a legitimate shot. Like, all right, you know, maybe there is something here with Tua, but if, I mean, he can go toe-to-toe with Josh Allen, I don't think there's any questions that he is. And again, maybe you have another performance like Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle have, where they both have 11 and go for over 170 yards and combine for four touchdowns. Again,
it's crazy.
It does make Tua's job a lot easier, but you still have to get those guys the ball. Some of the throws he was making late in that game were pretty damn good. So, again, I'm with you, kind of wait and see on him. Well, we'll see how he deals with Buffalo this week, who was an absolute juggernaut.
Did you watch the video of him flipped that I sent you that
shows
him
as a Raider? That is kind of wild.
He looks way better as a Raider.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, it shows, like, how good his form actually looks, because it doesn't look goofy seeing a left-handed quarterback throw the ball. But, yeah, if he can go toe-to-toe with Allen, it's a different story. But a friend of the program, Mike McClellan, who I was watching the games with on Sunday, had Hill, Waddle, and Amon-Ra St. Brown on his team.
Oh, God.
On the bench on his team. So his team went off.
Jesus.
Disappointed throughout the game. Like, it kind of picked up for Hill, like, as the game went on. But, he cashed. He had some
absolutely
there. But Amon-Ra's ridiculous, too.
That would have been, what, like 90 Waddle combined points or something ridiculous?
Yeah. Just that's absurd. Insane. I wonder what, like, you see people do, like, the max out lineups with the highest scoring player at each position. I wonder how many points it would have been, because there were some big performances. Yeah, Nick absolutely Chubb, too.
That's I got lucky in one of my leagues. I have him as my running back.
I think Mark Andrews had the most points for a tight end.
Diggs had been up there for wide receivers. Diggs, like,
receivers,
yeah,
like,
Hurts for quarterback. Like,
crazy. Hurts was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that it was a ridiculous game, and Miami stormed back, and Miami,
credit to them. They looked contender. Yeah, they looked legit, at least for the first 2 weeks of the season. They've won a couple of different ways so far. They've won in the blowout. They've won in kind of, I don't know if you call the Patriots game a close game, but, like, it wasn't the prettiest of games to start the year. So
no,
they can win nasty.
And they're being run by, like, an Imperial cloning guy from The Mandalorian and Dr.
Pershing.
He
is very weird. Yeah.
He looks just like Dr. Pershing from The Mandalorian. It's crazy. But yeah, 42 for the Dolphins, 38 for the Ravens. The Dolphins are 2-0. It's pretty wild. Not really, but, like, because the Patriots, we expect them to win. But the Ravens, a little crazier, even though the Ravens, you know, there's still questions about their receiving core. Running game is, you know, a work in progress with injuries. And, you know,
their running game is Lamar. Like, let's be
their
honest
game
here.
Is Lamar.
Like, that's he's
really what it is.
Yeah.
Jets and Browns, the Jets. The Jets were scrappy.
The only matchup where this could happen. Like, Jets Browns, the way this game ended.
Tua, Carson Wentz, and Joe Flacco are the top three passing yards leaders in the league.
That's, I don't know, ridiculous, disgusting. I don't know which word I want to use here. Like, completely outlandish.
Like, it's funny because, like, Joe Flacco, I think, is, you know, knows who he is at this point, and then he puts out a game like this. Zach Wilson could play this week. I don't know. Did Joe Flacco steal Zach Wilson's job? People are asking this.
Maybe.
That would be so funny.
That'd be insane.
I don't think it'll be the case.
No chance.
At this point, if Joe Flacco's playing like this, like, you might not have to rush him back. Maybe, you know, take it slow with Zach a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens there. Mari Cooper had a big game. Nick Chubb. I love Nick Chubb. He's the fucking man. He's so good. Had him on my dynasty team for so long. Now I have him on my ESPN team as well. The guy's just nasty, especially when you have Jacoby Brissett. You need to emphasize the run more.
He's been very serviceable. Give credit where credit's due to Jacoby Brissett. Like, if he can keep the Browns afloat until, what was it, week 11, week 12? Like, they might not be in bad shape here.
We'll see.
This loss against the Jets kind of hurts, but... Oh, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, when you lose to the Jets, that sucks. But, I mean, you got to give credit to Garrett Wilson as well.
Absolutely.
For him. He's awesome. He looked really good, as expected, even though he's on the Jets. I mean, he's a very talented player. I guess cool to see the Jets, you know, pull out like a game like this, but like, I don't really care if the Jets and they're going to be out.
Exactly. Year, so. Like I said, this is the only type of game where this can go down. The Browns score with however much time was left. I think they have it in the bag and then just don't play defense and the Jets come back and win. Like,
yeah, the Browns need to fix their defense because their defense is much better as a unit than they're showing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a them problem. So,
yep.
On to the next one, the Commanders and the Lions. This game was so funny because we had the Patriots game on one screen, red zone on the other, and like you didn't see a red zone highlight from the Commanders until like the third quarter. It was all Lions all the time.
Yep.
Reasonably so. They were dominating the Commanders. Carson Wentz ended up with a good game though, but Jared Goff
good so
had
far.
A better game in some ways, and you know, the ways that count, of course, when you're winning as well. And Amon-Ra St. Brown is nasty.
Ridiculous.
How
actively trying to trade for him in one of my fantasy leagues. I can't get anything done though.
I'm so
like,
happy
I want this guy so bad.
In my ESPN league, I reached on him a little bit given where he was on the board when I took him, and I'm so glad I did. How did he fall to the fourth round in the 2021 draft? I don't get it. I get it, you know, reading up about the guy throughout the year, there was reason for him to be there in comparison to other receivers and just the draft class as a whole. But it's just one of those guys where you see the talent on display and you're like, damn, he should have been a first round pick. And yeah, it's one
playing
of those
playing like
guys.
It. Absolutely.
He's ridiculous. He showed he can, you know, make plays in the backfield too. He's awesome. The Lions are awesome. Like,
yeah,
they're fun.
That's a team that's bought into the organization or just the, kind of the culture. Talk about
Campbell,
that.
Bite Nate Caps.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah, like DeAndre Swift is really good. He was one of the guys, the multiple guys that literally fell and then got into the end zone. Marcus Mariota did that too. He got up and threw a touchdown pass. That was really funny. We saw Travis Etienne fall. He didn't score in week one. He was just like running the end zone and fell. I don't know what's up with people just randomly falling like this, but it's funny. It gives me a laugh. The Lions, I mean, a tough finish with how they let the Commanders crawl back into the game, but Lions are building something.
Yeah, they're a team to keep an eye on.
First half,
absolutely
good for us. Offensive rookie of the year or defensive rookie of the year. Our predictions, but yeah, the Lions—they're good, man. And you know, the more and more I watch them, the more and more I'm worried about them beating the Patriots this year.
Yeah, that's the way they're going.
Could happen.
Solid defense. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Jared Goff. I mean, this is a game that's just a nightmare for me because I can't stand both these quarterbacks. I think they're both horrible, but. Eat my words on that. Carson Wentz has looked good so far, and Jared Goff has seemingly figured something out in Detroit again. Maybe that comes down to Campbell getting something out of him, but he looked pretty good in this game as well with the four touchdowns. Can't complain about that.
He sure did. Jared Goff is fine. He, you know, he doesn't blow you every week, but you know, I think he's a lot of teams will take him. You know, maybe not at the price tag because he still makes a lot of money, but that he's probably not worth exactly. But you know, this game. I mean, what? Come on, with the Colts.
What the hell's wrong with them? Like,
they're
not using Jonathan Taylor. They're not getting anything out of Matt Ryan. Like,
Jonathan Taylor had 6 carries for 9 yards at one point and finished with 9 and 54.
Awful.
They're not using him right. He's underachieving a little bit. Matt Ryan's throwing 3 picks. They're putting no points on the board. They didn't have Michael Pittman. Alec Pierce was banged up. I forget if he played or not. He was one of the receiver they drafted this year. Trevor Lawrence was good too. Maybe
he's looked okay so far to start the year.
Bus talk,
yeah,
it was premature, but it's also the Jaguars, so you never truly know.
True.
Looks like even though their receiver depth still sucks, having Christian Kirk is nice for Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. We'll get there. But
love that I kept Christian Kirk on my bench. Switched him out of my starting lineup 10 minutes before the 1 o'clock games.
Tell the people who you consider trading him for.
Yeah, that would not have been great. I desperately need a quarterback because I was stupid enough to draft and trust Dak Prescott. Needed a quarterback. I thought, again, stupid me, picking up Matt Ryan against the Jaguars would be good. It was not. So, like, half hour before the game started, I hit up my buddy who was asking about Christian, or was asking if I wanted Trey Lance. The trade would have been Trey Lance and I think another player. I can't remember who it was. Maybe Robbie Anderson, I think it was, just for the receiver depth for Christian Kirk and Matt Ryan. And thank God that trade did not go through, because I would have been absolutely kicking myself if I traded away a guy with two touchdowns and six targets on six receptions and is probably my de facto number one receiver right now with the way he's playing. Because he's been the most consistent out of all the guys I have.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Lawrence looked like Trevor Lawrence, and James Robinson was good again, and Christian Kirk is getting all the targets he needs to be good and converting on them. Last week, I think he was 6 for 12. Now he's 6 for 6, so that's much more efficient. Two touchdowns. Jaguars win decisively, and they're number one in the division, which is stupid. But
the division sucks.
Their division is stupid. So, you know, stupid game, stupid division. So, Bucks, Saints. I want football fights every week.
These two guys legitimately hate each other.
Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore, it's been known they don't like each other. Evans bundles Marshawn Lattimore. I didn't see this on the broadcast. Maybe I was too busy freaking out, like laughing. But he's like, apparently, like, it's Tom Brady. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, he melted to the referees. Reasonable. He's like, that's the GOAT. What do you want me to do about that?
Reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, Brady kind of started that fight. Like, if you go back and watch the replay, he was jawing at Lattimore, and then Lattimore got in his face, and Mike Evans obviously comes flying off the bench. Now, I guess. I think of their old head coaches
now? But
yeah, that's true. I mean, Brady might not have any receivers now for a game against Aaron Rodgers.
They're going to elevate Cole Beasley,
But that's a situation in Tampa Bay, though. I thought I saw today that Bruce Arians is getting not reprimanded, but the league was like, hey, you can't be telling players to come off the bench and go take guys out on the field. Like, what are you doing? But, I mean, that was the biggest thing from this game. I mean, other than that, it was an ugly game. You know, Brady couldn't get anything going until late. Jameis Winston's playing with, what, like four fractures in his back? That came out right before the game started. Like,
that is insane that that can even happen, dude. Like,
Well, he gave a regular old Jameis Winston game. Maybe it was because of the back with the three picks.
Pain everywhere.
He wasn't kidding. He was not kidding.
It's an all-time. Especially coming out of him. Anyone else is not as funny, but pain.
It's pain in all four quadrants. Just everywhere. My back's broken.
Yeah, that can't tell you that. It's like, Brady likes to talk his shit. This isn't the first time Brady's gone in somebody's face. So,
true.
You know, he likes to talk his shit for good reason. This is the best ever, but
absolutely
they pull it off 20-10. Not the prettiest win, but things haven't been great for the Bucs.
No, off to a slow start.
Going off to the start they would have liked.
You maybe expect with the offseason that Brady had, maybe, you know, he's trying to ease himself back into things. And there was a report that he's going to get Wednesdays off for the season when it comes to training before the or camp before the next game.
Wednesday's off for the season, so
he's already back.
He can think about the show. He can think about, oh, I'm so excited for this module.
That's true. I don't know why I didn't even think of that. Good on you.
Yeah, he's just preparing himself. He's like, he probably wakes up. He's like, he brushes his teeth.
Show day, bitches.
He's like dancing in the bathroom as he brushes his teeth. Like, I'm so excited for the show tonight.
And Giselle walks in and he's like, everything's terrible again. down to the dumps, Tom Brady.
I was going to make a stupid joke that I'm going to refrain from.
But, all right. Lombardi Lenny promised my fantasy team more touchdowns. I'm very appreciative of that. I need more touchdowns out of just anybody. I think I might have like one touchdown scored for my entire fantasy team this year. It's not great. Everybody I bench scores all my touchdowns.
Me, on the other hand, I've had 138 point and 165 point showings, and I'm 0-2. So
nice. You and I are the opposite. I have not broke 100 points yet in my work league. I have scored 76 and 96 the first 2 weeks of the season.
But I'm 2-0 in Dynasty. I won by 2 points this week in my Dynasty.
Well, that works. So
that's a reversal of fortune. Panthers, Giants. I hate watching the Panthers so much.
They suck.
They're so bad.
Yep.
The Giants, they're 2-0, but like the Giants,
they're a fraud 2-0. Let's be honest.
It's okay. Like they're they're just still not exciting to me. It's just one of these games. It's a stinker of a game. It's a stinker of a score. It's a field goal game through and throughout. Both kickers, as you have noted here, perfect. 4-for-4 for Graham Gano. Eddie Pinheiro, 3-for-3. Perfect on their extra points as well. Gross game. I don't really have much to say, but Christian McCaffrey is
nothing about this game.
Christian McCaffrey was good, but
yeah, good bounce back for him
when he's healthy. So
Matt Rhule probably needs to get fired because that Panthers team is doing absolutely nothing.
I've just never really understood the appeal of Matt Rhule ever.
I can't think of anything that would get me riled up as a Panthers fan for him. He's shown nothing as a head coach. So, I mean, they were a fraudulent, what were they, 5-0 at one point last year, 4-0? Everyone was like, oh, the Panthers are off to a hot start. Like, they didn't play anybody, and their defense carried them until they've played a real team. So now you're seeing this year they just suck as a whole.
I guess so. Yeah, I'll take your word for it because I don't
remember that thank
for
some you.
Reason. But,
I'm like 99% sure.
Yeah, the Falcons. I mean, they keep it close again, but they still lose. We had the 28-3 collapse that almost happened for the Rams. But nope, didn't happen.
Nope.
So,
what are your thoughts on?
You see 28-3.
Yeah, I mean, it's the easy joke. Like, I don't know. Like, the Rams, they put up 31 points, but I mean, they you almost blow that game. They obviously didn't have a great game against Buffalo week one. Like, Cooper Kupp's kind of that whole offense, I feel like. I know Allen Robinson had a good game, but Kupp again, 11 catches, 108 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, sooner or later, you got to think a team is going to keen in on that. And it's like, all right, if we stop Cooper Kupp, we might have a really good shot of beating the Rams because he's been most of their production.
Good luck.
That's true. It is very true. You can only hope to contain him. You can't stop him. And then on the flip side of that, the usage of Kyle Pitts for the Falcons has just been absolutely ridiculous. Like, you draft a tight end as high as you do, and he's got, 4 catches and 38 yards on the entire season? I know it was their owner or their coach, whoever it was saying, we're not playing fantasy football. My buddy made a good point. You're not playing fantasy football, but why would you use your tight end that you drafted 4 or 3, wherever he was drafted overall? It's idiotic the way they're using him.
Yeah, they're a stupid franchise. So
they are. Yep. It
wasn't really that surprising.
Patriots, that Super Bowl knocked them back into the Stone Age when it came to how to run a football team.
They missed Matt Ryan.
I don't think so. After the performance he had, I think they'll take Marcus Mariota.
I don't know. I think at this rate, we're going to see Desmond Ridder by the midway point of the season.
That wouldn't be the worst thing. He'll throw to Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, I have to imagine he will. But at least for them, Drake London's doing stuff, so that's good.
True. I was just going to say that. I just traded for him, so that means Kyle Pitts is going to get all the targets this week, and Drake London will do nothing because my team is where people go to die.
Yeah. Kyle Pitts, 11 catches, 150 yards incoming.
Yeah. London 0-for-2 with -5 yards, something stupid.
Yeah. And he'll throw an interception somehow, like DJ Dallas did in the Seahawks game.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst interception ever. But why are you putting DJ Dallas in that position? If I'm DJ Dallas, I'm like, what the fuck?
Trying to get fancy, trying to get some sort of trick play to screw somebody over.
The poor guy, dude. He's probably like, why am I
what am I doing with
this?
Yeah.
They did 2 trick plays in a row.
That's the Seahawks. Yep. That's where their offense is going to come from this year because they don't have a ton of it.
They went back down to earth. The 49ers lose Trey Lance for the rest of the season, but that didn't matter because the Seahawks are back to being Seahawks. I expected them to go 0-17. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
you're looking really good on one prediction. We'll get to that game in a little bit, but you got one really solid looking prediction right now with the way one team's going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we will get to that. Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, he looked fine too.
He did. The 49ers don't deserve it with the treatment of him this year and kind of jerking him around left and right. But you got to do what you got to do if you're Garoppolo.
We talked about his status. No matter what happens, he wants to cash out somewhere else next
year.
That's
true.
He keeps it up. He's going to cash out. Somebody will pay him a lot next year. So, in the free agent market. So, we'll see.
That is true.
I didn't see much of this game on Red Zone, so I can't really speak too much. But I think Debo had a solid game.
I think so, yeah.
And, that's to be expected. And the Seahawks stunk. So, they got their high of winning and beating Russ. But I don't know how the rest of the season is going to go for them. But, I don't think it's going to go that good. Cardinals and Raiders was
was on drugs.
Yeah, this game was awesome, especially towards the end. We saw flashes of prime AJ Green with that catch in the end zone.
He dropped one earlier on too, where it's totally redeemed himself. So it that was great to see.
Yep. I mean, the Raiders are 0-2, and I did not expect to say that.
I didn't realize until after looking at it afterwards, like Davante Adams had, what, 2 catches for 12 yards or something, just insanely pedestrian. Like, you definitely don't see that to him. Like, I think I texted you, like, Hunter Renfrow had to have money on this game for the Cardinals because the two fumbles he had on back-to-back plays almost in overtime was just absolutely horrendous. And then Kyler Murray, I guess, like I have in the outline here, he's an Xbox guy because the COD beta dropped on PlayStation this weekend, and he played pretty darn well, so he must not be able to play yet.
Yeah, maybe he's a PC guy, and I don't know.
Don't bet on the Cardinals this weekend, then.
I have to imagine he's a PC guy if he's, you know, super rich and like
probably he probably is one of those people that like built his own PC. And
given the aim assist, I don't know, he might want to be a controller guy because the aim assist in that game looks nuts, especially in third person mode. Yeah, Kyler ran 84 yards scrambling on a 2-point conversion at one point. That's pretty crazy. I saw a video of Hasbulla running away from somebody, and it's like, this is Kyler Murray in the pocket.
Taking off. I've
never seen anything better. Mm-hmm. One of my coworkers was saying she saw a picture of Kyler Murray from like the point of view of behind him, and he like actually can't see over his line because he's so small.
Probably, that would not surprise me.
That's just so crazy to think about. Yeah. He's the definition of a video game quarterback, which everyone likes to say these days. But the Cardinals pull it out. A game, you know, I would have expected them to lose definitely, even though, you know, they have Kyler Murray.
Nope.
But, you know, James Conner gets banged up in this game a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be long-term, but we'll see how it goes. But this game was pretty nuts. So
yeah, I'd say so.
So love a good OT game. Love some chaos at the end. And you love seeing AJ Green doing stuff, I guess, because that's cool. Because he was
still really getting awesome it done.
Time. Still getting it done. I mean, talking about predictions for me, like my Bengals prediction looks like a disaster right now.
Yeah, well, I know. What is wrong with them,
dude?
Like, Joe Burrow's gonna get killed. That's their problem.
He deleted Twitter and Instagram, so maybe he's gonna go sicko mode now. Maybe, you know, he just wants to lock it in. Earphones on, haters out. Wearing spoons on his eyes like the kid in the old vine.
I was gonna say postseason LeBron getting rid of all the social media, but
blocking out the haters.
Yeah, something has to change. I mean, I thought I heard the other day he's on pace to get sacked over 100 times this year. Like, that's ridiculous.
This makes no sense.
I don't know, when you spend this that team, much on the offensive line, you would think
pissing on teams.
A Super Bowl
better
hangover.
Offensive line. They had a good little addition to their secondary in Dax Hill. Which, you know, maybe he's not an impact contributor, like superstar, like out of the gate, but a guy that's probably going to be a good NFL player. Nothing on defense to really like be concerned about in comparison to last year. What the fuck?
Super Bowl hangover. That's the only thing I can think of. Like,
I think they legit. I see the storyline of people talking about like, oh, they didn't give their starters enough reps in the preseason. I have to imagine
seen that too.
Into it a little bit. Maybe it's just chemistry. I don't know what's going on with this unit. They should legit have like the best offensive line in the league, and Joe Burrow should like be spotless. And it's just not happening. It's so strange, and to lose to Cooper Rush makes it even worse. It's like Cooper Rush was fine.
He's not. Yeah, he's not a terrible quarterback. I know people joke about it, but like he's not a terrible quarterback. He's more than serviceable, I think.
It's
the
like
big thing too
the
is they kept.
Old. It's weird.
Yeah, they kept Jamar Chase in check though. I mean, you thought Diggs would have, you know, had his lunch eaten, but he had what, maybe 4 or 5 catches for I think like 40 yards. That was it. Like Jamar Chase really didn't do
a
whole lot.
I would have won with 165 points, but I lost.
It was mainly T. Higgins, and that was really about it. I mean, Mixon couldn't get a ton going. Like,
I still think, like, anytime I see a player come back from a concussion so soon, I don't understand it. Unless it's, like, a really minor concussion, like, it just blows my mind to have a head injury at any level for a concussion and play a football game the next week.
Absolutely,
Like, I don't care how severe it is. It's just a mind-blowing concept, maybe partially because I've never had a concussion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, playing hockey, I've been around people with concussions enough to know how they affect people. And, you know, it's just bonkers to me how you can play a week after being diagnosed with a concussion, but T. Higgins does it this week. Players have done it in the past, but it wasn't enough for the Bengals. They lose to the fucking Cowboys, and that is stupid. It is so stupid. But yeah, 16-1, like I had predicted for them, is off the table.
That's out the door. Yeah,
we'll see if they just win out though and go 15-2. Maybe they do. Maybe Joe Burrow goes on the war path. I kind of doubt it, but I beat those slightly for the Bengals.
At least yeah, they got to turn things around quick.
This team is going to make the playoffs, though. Like the Bengals are going to make the playoffs. They'll figure things out. So. But like this is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Losing to Mitch Trubisky, Cooper Rush just can't happen with how good that roster is. Much improved from last year, especially on offense. Just can't happen. Texans and Broncos, gross. Gross.
Who cares?
Gross. Russell Wilson was bad. The Texans were bad. I mean, it was 16-9. Like,
Nathaniel Hackett's having the fans count down the play clock because he took, what, two or three delay a game penalty. Like, that team's going to be dismantled by the head coach. That's the one thing that's going to knock the Broncos off, I think, this year, is how much of an idiot he is.
It's just – it's crazy. It should be working. Like, I can't believe a guy that contributed to Aaron Rodgers' success for a while is – not doing much better running a good team than he is. It's really weird to me, but it just shows that it's not as easy as it can be made out to be for a new coach. This game was gross. There's really not a lot to say about it.
No, I get nothing on this game because other than, like you said, that Russ was not good. Like, maybe there's some cause for concern there. It is early still, but who knows?
Yeah, pretty tough. Bears-Packers, I will defer to you. I fell asleep before this game.
I had this game off in the third quarter because it was just the typical Packers beat the crap out of the Bears. I mean, the Bears look so inept. Like, I feel bad for her I was gonna say Hurts. Why can't I think of their quarterback's name for the Bears? Thank you, Fields. I feel so bad for him because he just has no offense around him. Like, it's David Montgomery and that's it. He was good, 15 carries for 122 yards. The Packers, again, Aaron Rodgers didn't have a ton, you know, in the air. 19 to 25, 234 yards, two touchdowns. Pretty average game for his standards. It was all about Green Bay's run game. They established it early. They established it often. Aaron Jones was great. 15, 132 and a touchdown. A.J. Dillon, 18 and 61. They just, you know, they beat up on the Bears. It's the same as usual. And again, really no fight whatsoever from Chicago.
Yeah. I can anything.
Yeah, you go.
See any of it. Yeah. So
part of the game I watched, I wish I was sleeping. Like, it's
the Bears.
I watched way too much of that game than I should have. Like,
water is wet.
So bad. Yeah.
I mean, the Bills. Look at the Bills.
17-0.
Look at the Bills.
Yeah.
Look at the Bills.
The Bills are very good, and the Titans might be very bad this year. If Derrick Henry can't get going, like, then their offense is so screwed, it's not gone. Even funny.
No AJ Brown, it's gone. It's gone. Their offense is gone. We saw Malik Willis partially because, you know, they were getting speed bags, but like, I don't know. Ryan Tannehill's not doing it a lot. I think we're gonna see them go towards Malik Willis, especially later in the season.
Do you? Okay.
Things go the way they are going. At least, you know, especially if they're losing games like this.
True. It's just no hope in sight. You turn it over to the young kid, yo.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see how you keep Ryan Tannehill much longer beyond this season. If, you know, you're losing games like this, you know, you can't do anything with the offense outside of Derrick Henry if it's not working, partially because they traded A.J. Brown, which isn't great, but, you know, he drafts a good young receiver in Treylon Burks. You bring in Robert Woods.
He was okay in this game from what I heard. Other than that, like, nothing great. This was the Allen and Diggs show once again, like I have in the outline. If you could
Jaguars take over the division?
Oh, maybe. They're gonna run away with that division with the way the rest of the teams are going.
That would be so funny. But the Titans got speed bagged. The Bills are very good. Josh Allen is fucking nasty.
The MVP favorite right now.
Is him.
Yep.
He'll
remind you.
It's becoming a meme now, like, calling people him. But yeah, I mean, he reminded people while he's on the sidelines, like, I'm him. He's him in the league. Yep, he's him. It's not Justin Jefferson right now, at least temporarily, because he got shut down. But
yeah, that was surprising.
Stephon Diggs is him. Jamar Chase is temporarily not him. Cooper Kupp is number two in the him category, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But you could also put Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill up there right now. But
absolutely. I mean,
Josh Allen was asked on PMT if he's him, but he was, trying to defer it. Like, oh, you could say a lot of people are him right now, you know, being humble, the humble Wyoming alum.
Sounds like the type of guy he is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Bills are just – the Bills are nasty.
It's just – it's talent up and down the roster. There's really no weak, yeah. Like – their run game maybe is the weakest part of their team, but they don't run the football. So
they don't even have Trey White.
That's I keep forgetting that he's not out there. Like that's so terrifying to think about.
They're so good. They are so good, and just these games are gonna add to the terror surrounding Patriots and Bills games this year.
Yeah.
Woof. We saw some Malik Willis. We saw some of Hassan Haskins because, you know, they're giving Derrick Henry a rest because it wasn't working. We'll see how things go for the Titans, but it hasn't been a good start.
Not great, yeah.
Hasn't been a good start. The Vikings and the Eagles. The Eagles look pretty good. And
another beatdown game, yeah.
Did not look good in primetime.
Shocker.
Justin Jefferson, second time in his young career, he's been shut down by Darius Slay, so he's got to figure out in the future how to combat his kryptonite, it looks like right now. But, you know, he's still Justin Jefferson. It's not, you know, the end of the world for him.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Darius Slay hasn't figured out.
That's the new Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore in the making, maybe?
I don't know.
Marshawn Lattimore tends to... Justin's
a fighter, but...
That's true. You know, he's much as a wild card as Evans is, but... But, I mean, the Eagles were great for... I didn't catch a ton of this game from what I heard. The Eagles were just... just outstanding the entire game. You know, really Jalen Hurts was excellent. You have AJ Brown go off in week one. He had a solid game, but Devonta Smith was the guy in this one. 7 catches on 7 targets for 80 yards after throwing up nothing in week one. 0 catches in that one. Miles Sanders is healthy and he's running hard. 17 rushes, 80 yards. Like that offense is legit. And kind of, I think as both of us predicted, you know, I think we both had the Eagles winning that division. They're off to a great start.
I had the Cowboys.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
okay, so it's just me with the Eagles. Not great.
No, it's gonna be the Eagles. Like this is proven it. Do I know if this is gonna continue? No, but like Jalen.
Yeah, they'll fall off at some point, but they're gonna be consistent.
No,
they won't fall off, but like
they're gonna win the division.
I think they'll win the division. They'll have one or two games.
I wanted to put them to win the division to start, but I, you know, run the simulator and all. I didn't want to go back and just change shit.
Yeah.
I had the Cowboys at the top, so I kept them there. And, you know, healthy, maybe they could win the division. You know,
Dak is – apparently they think he's going to play in week 4 or 5, which is kind of crazy to think about a effed-up thumb that you're going to be able to play this quick turnaround. But
yeah, I don't think
– who knows?
Go well.
Probably not.
Go well.
Nope.
Yeah, man. Fuck. The Eagles are really good,
mm-hmm.
which sucks to say. I don't like Philly. But – yeah, I mean, you go from AJ Brown 1 week, Devontae Smith the next. Pretty nice. Pretty nice.
I'd say so.
One other thing I wanted to mention about this game that I don't remember all of a sudden. What was it?
Is it about the Eagles or the Vikings? Do you remember what team it was about?
It was about the Eagles. Don't remember. Damn it. Oh, maybe it'll come to me, but I'm forgetting something. Oh, they limited Dalvin Cook.
I was gonna ask if it was something because I know he had a pretty bad game. So,
which is hard to do.
So. Yep. Who knows? Maybe it's just a prime time thing with the Vikings as a whole. Like Kirk Cousins stinks in it. Maybe Dalvin Cook not he's a really solid player.
Pick. Like yeah, it was a prime Kirk Cousins pick, one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Forgetting who it was too, but like. Yeah, primetime Kirk, not great. Not great. But that's our week two thoughts. That is our week two thoughts. And we will wrap up the show with some Patriots and Ravens thoughts.
Yeah, heading into this game. What is the confidence level? Because for me, it's not very high. I know, again, a confidence-boosting win for the Patriots. But then on the flip side of that, you have kind of a back-breaking loss for the Ravens. That's probably a game they should not have let get away. They blow a 35-14 lead in the second half. 1 point allowed 21 straight unanswered points. We're outscored 35-10 in the second half and 28-3 in the fourth quarter alone. Ravens are going to be pissed off playing this game. You'd have to imagine. I mean, the Patriots, they did play them well the last time these two teams met in Gillette in the Cam Newton era Patriots, that wonderful time we lived in. The Patriots did some things well in that game. They limited Lamar Jackson. That's obviously the big takeaway that we're going to have for this one. in that game against the Patriots, 24 for 34, 249 yards, two touchdowns, a pick. Did have 11 rushes for 55 yards. Evan Lazar had a good point on maybe how the Patriots should try to stop Lamar Jackson. He said the Dolphins blitzed Lamar Jackson 17 times, and his numbers were stupid. 13 for 16, 213 yards, a 13.3 yards per attempt, two touchdowns. Thinking the Patriots will go in a different strategy. If you had to put on your coaching cap, give any sort of insight, what do you think the best – I mean, it's obvious. Let's limit Lamar on the run game. But if you could give any sort of insight onto what you think the Patriots might be able to do to stop Lamar Jackson, if you remember back to that game a couple of years back, what worked well against Lamar Jackson?
I don't really know.
Okay. Hope and pray and, you know, maybe.
That's where I'm at. That's okay. Where I'm at. Because there's the easy answer is to get after him, but that doesn't really necessarily
doesn't work. It hasn't worked success. This year. Yeah.
It's like the thing that it works well when it, you know, you're getting sacks, but when you have a guy that can escape quite easily, it's not like a guaranteed thing.
When you have a guy that can run for a 79-yard rushing touchdown, things get scary.
This year we don't have Stephon Gilmore, JC Jackson, so it's not like, you know, you can just rely on them. Mm-hmm. You have a much different look in secondary. You just got to put points on the board. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to stop Lamar Jackson.
Which, that's so, what I mean. I don't know if they can do that either. I'm
not feeling good about this game. I don't have a clear answer to how they can, like, limit him on defense because I don't think they can.
No, like, I still don't think they have the speed to do so. Like, again, I'm trying to remember back to what they did well in that game back in, I think it was 2020 that they beat them. Mm-hmm. Like, again, you look at the stat line and you say, well, they limited him in the rushing game. 55 yards, they sacked him twice. Can they do that again? Probably not. It's two different, like you said, two different teams. The Patriots don't have that number one guy. Rashad Bateman's obviously wasn't, I don't think he was there in 2020. He was a rookie last year, so no. But he stepped up. You know, he's the clear-cut one when it comes to receivers. The Patriots, they, Mark Andrews in that matchup, seven receptions, nine targets for 61 yards. Pretty average game for him. Again, for his standards, you got to think you'll see a lot of Kyle Duggar in this matchup against him. Duggar played well in that game, 12 tackles. Seven of them were solo, so I think he was mainly on Mark Andrews. You got to hope for a big game from him. You got to hope to limit Andrews. And again, if you can contain Lamar, that's easier said than done. That's your best case. Like you mentioned, though, if they get into a shootout or the Ravens start putting points on the board, the Patriots aren't going to be able to keep up. Like, they're averaging what? I think 12 points to start the season. Yeah. The Ravens are averaging 31 points per game. The Patriots are averaging 12. Like, it's night and day with these two offenses. You're not going to get the same mistakes you got from Mr. Trubisky last week. You're not going to get away with the same plays you got away with. And the Ravens, you know, maybe some will argue are a better coach team than the Steelers are. Maybe some people will argue that. So you're not going to get as many miscues as you had last week to capitalize on.
Yeah, I got caught up in all the week two, like, thoughts and anything before that. We had some comments from YouTube. So okay. I wanted to apologize to Joel Shapiro. I got caught up and wasn't even looking at the comments. Which are kind of in the past now.
Okay, we can get you though.
The play calling is a little suspect. Too many receivers too close to each other. I assume he's talking about the Patriots. Can kind of agree with that.
Yep.
Barker in the slot. I like that as well.
Wouldn't hate that. Again, Joel is something different.
But if you are, apologies, Joel got caught up in the talk. We're looking at the outline more so than the chat. Who should be the spy on Lamar on Sunday? This was at 8:26, but I think it's relevant right now.
Absolutely. That's a great question.
Spy on Lamar, like,
who do you got that's that fast you can keep up with him?
Wilson.
I was just, yeah, maybe Mac Wilson. Do you maybe throw? I know it's. Do you throw Duggar in that position? Like,
yeah, I think
maybe some Jabril Peppers. Like, he's a guy that played a little bit last week.
I like that. Yeah. The thing I don't like about Duggar is I want him on Mark Andrews.
True, that's what it kind of takes away from that, and then you don't really have someone to cover it. So maybe it's going to be. Again, you saw Jabril Peppers kind of do some things. Maybe Adrian Phillips, if he's healthy, like maybe you can switch Phillips and Duggar off of Andrews and put one as a spy. They might try that, but it's going to be so tough. Like, there's no one, you know, right answer because there's so many different things you have to throw at Jackson. He's so developed in his career now from 2 years ago where, you know, he's going to be able to capitalize on, you know, maybe mistakes the Patriots made last time that these two teams faced each other and he wasn't able to do so on.
Yeah, this is just—it's just not going to be fun.
I don't think really, so.
Like, I'm not super jazzed up in this game.
No,
I think it's just going to be tough sledding. Do I think their defense is like going to be a massive problem for Mac Jones? No, like I think their defense is good, but like
Tua just lit them up. Like,
yeah, like I think Mac Jones can do all right against them. Do I think he can tear them up? No,
no.
But you know, it'd be even worse with Kyle Fuller healthy, but he's out for the season, so that's one area where they're hampered a little bit. They're, you know, of course, hoping to have him all year, but this is a matchup where I hope Devontae Parker can move past, you know, work past guys like
Marcus Williams
on him, or Marlon Humphrey, a little bit of both, and get going. That's the saving grace I'm hoping for this week. They can figure something out there. Aguilar having a great game would be dope, but can't really like expect that on a consistent basis. And we talked about Kendrick Bourne too. Like, get him more involved. Get the focus off of Devontae Parker every once in a while somehow. Like, mix it up. Get the tight ends involved.
That would be nice too. You're paying two of them. Yep.
Like, come on, please. Please.
That's just, again, we talked about it earlier for the people that missed it. Like, that's been the biggest thing for me too. Like you mentioned, is you get into the red zone and Hunter Henry's non-existent after being, as you said, one of, if not the best tight ends in the red zone last year. Like, it's just astonishing to me. Again, it's something's going to have to change. You sent me these couple of tweets I saw, you know, talking about the Patriots and the lack of motion. So maybe that's something they have to do, is, you know, get more creative at the line of scrimmage. This is from Seth Walder of ESPN Sports Analytic writer, where the Patriots rank when it comes to motion to snap rates and pre-snap motion rates. Don't know what goes into those, so I'm not going to tell you too much about it, but just kind of to show what the Patriots offense has looked like. He has the motion at snap rates via ESPN snap stats info video tracking. The Patriots are at 4.3. That ranks dead last when it comes to teams offensively. And for pre-snap motion rates, regardless of whether the player came set or not, the Patriots are ranked 19th with a 48.3%. So, like I said, you might have to get a little creative, add some speed to the lineup, put Kendrick Bourne in there, move some guys around. Just do something, because you're going to have to get creative against this Baltimore team. You've shown you can beat him in the past, but it's a whole different beast this year. Lamar is leaps and bounds better than he was 2 years ago. So it's going to be tricky, but maybe the Patriots can get it done. You and I don't seem to think so, being the case. But
No, certainly not.
Nope.
The injury report, as we talk about each week.
So the big Ravens, names on it.
Yeah, Deshaun Elliott, concussed, did not participate. Justin Houston, big name. Rest, did not participate, so I imagine he'll be healthy. Ronnie Stanley did not participate, so that could be a big loss. Yeah, it's dealt with some health issues the past few years, and you know, it's been tough sliding for him, but when he's in the game, he's very effective. Alejandro Villanueva also out with rest. Brandon Williams did not participate with a neck injury. Derek Wolfe with a hip/back injury did not participate. Tavon Young did not participate with a knee injury. Marquise Brown, hold on a minute. Marquise Brown, what's going on here? Do they have another Marquise Brown?
Are you looking at the wrong injury report? What are you looking at?
Wait Marquise a minute. What the Brown? Hell? This was tweeted today. Jeez. It was tweeted today. This guy, what is this guy doing? Kevin Ostreicher. All right, I got the wrong injury report.
I have it off the end today. The Patriots website, if you want that one.
Yeah, I love that one.
All right, so
it up on Twitter for some reason, like, what? This guy's tweeting the
Hollywood Brown's today. Not well. He's not wrong. Hollywood Brown's not playing in this game on Sunday.
I was like, he was.
Oh, he's 100%
comparison
right there.
He did a comparison of the week, the injury reports. Like, who does that? This guy just unintentionally pranked me. I'm deferring to you. I'm relinquishing injury report duties to you. And
all right. So from the official Patriots website of the week three Patriots Ravens, just to piss somebody off, and he got you. So I'm sorry that it had to be you for his classic prank, but that's just where we are right now. So we'll start with the away team for the Ravens for the did not participate. Even when you were reading that, I'm like, there are some names on this injury report that were limited that you're saying didn't participate. So I don't know what was going on.
Wait a minute. Do they have another Marquise Brown? That's
maybe picked up on it's it. Spelled differently. I'm pretty sure I don't know.
Everybody on that injury report is still on the team that I read before then.
All right. Well, if I read this one, you read yours and see if they match up somewhat. So for the did not participate for the Ravens today, was Calais Campbell for a non-injury related Huh? I'm gonna nitpick. Sorry, Calais Campbell. Devin Duvernay with a concussion. Justin Houston, he was on yours. That was not injury related. And then two cornerbacks.
Oh, wow,
two...
again. There we
go. Marlon Humphrey with a groin and Marcus Peters with not injury related. They were all did not practice. For limited participants, Lamar Jackson with a right elbow injury, but Harbaugh did say he was good to go, so there's no concerns there. Tight end Isaiah Likely with a groin. Wide receiver James is it Proche the second. Don't know how to say it.
Yeah.
With a groin injury, you had tackle Ronnie Stanley with an ankle. DB Brendan Stephens with a quad. Cornerback Damarian Williams with an ankle. For participation was running back J.K. Dobbins and defensive tackle Travis Jones, both with knee injuries. On the Patriots side of things, tough here. Did not participate was Kyle Duggar with a knee and Jacoby Myers with a knee. Myers being on there is a little surprising. For limited participation, Joshua Bledsoe with a groin. Cody Davis with a calf. Devon Godshaw with a back, Raekwon McMillan with a thumb, DeMarcus Mitchell with a knee, and Adrian Phillips with ribs. The Patriots did not have anybody for full participation listed. So there you go. No Marquise Brown on this one.
I like that would not last if Kyle Duggar's not covering.
They might get blown out if Kyle Duggar's not playing. Because Mark Andrews might have a free-for-all, which would be scary.
The weirdest thing about this game for me is, you know, I'll segue us into predictions.
Mm-hmm.
I have a weird feeling the Patriots are going to keep this somewhat close. I'm going 30-20 Ravens.
Okay.
I don't know why this. I really could see this game being like 34-13 Ravens.
That would be bad. That would not be a fun home opener for the Patriots.
I don't know, man. Something is forcing me to keep it closer.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they had 2 years ago was a close game, so they've shown they can do it in the past.
It could be one of those games where like the Ravens get up early and like extend a claw back, and then they claw back and it just doesn't end up meaning much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going 30-20. I don't feel good about it, but that's just what my gut's telling me, and I can't go against it. I do think, you know, as they're kind of galvanizing a little bit, the Patriots are gonna make some noise on offense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the 20 comes from. You know, I think they'll put up some points. I don't think they're going to roll over and die. I don't think the Ravens defense is like super overwhelmingly good right now. If Tua can tear him up, I think he's in a better spot, you know, in terms of like his development than Mac Jones.
Weapons,
coaching. But, you know, I think Mac can put up some points. I think we'll see Damian Harris get in the end zone. And yeah, I think they'll put up some points, but it won't be enough. They're not winning this game. I don't see a way they win this game unless Lamar Jackson just completely sucks, and I really don't see that happening right now.
It's not going to happen, yeah. They'll limit him. But
if Kyle Duggar's out, GG. Like,
oh, if Kyle Duggar's out, I 100% agree with you. 34-13, yeah. Like, yep, like,
how are you going to cover him? How are you going to cover him without Kyle Duggar?
Because you won't have Duggar playing, and then you'll have 50%, 75%, whatever it is, Adrian Phillips, which is not going to get it done either, as much as I like Adrian Phillips. Like, you just can't have a guy that's not 100% going up. And again, you know, if Duggar's not 100%, that might affect the game that Mark Andrews has as well. So I'm with you. I'm not feeling great. I think the Patriots keep it close a little bit. I don't know how much of a 7-point difference it closes, but I have the Ravens 24-17. Like I mentioned, the thing that scares me the most about this game is how utterly bad the Ravens looked at the end of that Dolphins game, and just how, you know, utterly awful that loss and that collapse was. So I think they're going to come in here and play pissed off. Like, yeah. I said, they lost the last time they were in Gillette in close fashion. So that may still be in the back of some guys' minds that were on that team. Maybe Lamar Jackson too. The Patriots will find a way to keep it close. It'll be another nitty gritty game. Maybe you see some improvements in the offense for the Pats, but I just think, again, Ravens talent-wise, it comes down to the quarterback, and Lamar Jackson is just leaps and bounds better than Mac Jones. He'll find a way to win this game for Baltimore.
Yeah, and they found ways. Devin Duvernay, you know, it's a kickoff return, but he got on the board.
Yep.
And we saw Rashad Bateman go off. Rashad Bateman looks the return, you know, on him trying to sell himself as a number one receiver.
He's looking pretty good so far
for the most part. So maybe they end up being a problem too and things are even worse, but I don't know. I kind of have a feeling like they can keep Bateman somewhat in check, but I do have a little bit of, you know, doubt in the back of my mind that he could have a pretty good game, and I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But my biggest thing, it's Andrews and it's Jackson. So, not the president, but
gotcha. What a way to end that.
Yeah, but this is this stage of the show at the end. Mm-hmm. Where I, you know, either ramble or my brain kind of turns to soup a little bit. But and occasionally I make a dumb joke. But not feeling good. Hope we're wrong. One of those situations, of course. We hope they win. But I just, I don't see it. I don't see it this week. I really, really, really don't. That sucks. But, you know, maybe Mac goes off. That'd be cool.
Maybe it surprises.
Make some big plays. Maybe Devontae Parker plays really good. Maybe the tight ends get involved. Maybe Stevenson gets in the end zone for the first time this year.
That'd be nice as well. All these things you're listing off are positives. Will they happen? Yes. Who knows? Oh, yeah. You're being very...
What?
Oh, you said yes to my will they happen, so...
Oh.
Or it sounded like you were going to say yes to that. I know, yeah, I got you.
If I did, I didn't mean to say that. I don't know. Yeah,
fair enough.
My brain, you know, is getting into end of show mode.
Yep.
So, yeah, it is the end of the show. That's going to wrap it up for episode 112. Next week, we'll have Bruins preseason to talk about and prospects and stuff, and that'll be cool. And hopefully the Patriots will win. And I don't know, probably not going to talk about the Red Sox because they stink.
They just lost to the Reds 1-0, scored one run, 5-1 they lost.
Wow, that's bad, one might say.
Yes, it is.
And the Celtics, we'll talk about the Celtics once they, you know, roll the season around. So, yeah, that's going to wrap it up. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. You can find us Spotify, Apple, in particular, if you want to leave a review there. You can find us on the Full Press Coverage app, and as well as all the other Full Press content. You can check out the Full Press Twitter accounts, as well as Twitch and YouTube. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Craddy. You can follow Ryan at @Ryan_Savaggio. And you can follow the show at @SellingCraddyPod. We're also on TikTok. Throw out Savaggio and Craddy. We'll post when we want to. That's kind of the deal. But when we do post, we like to think it's good content, and the people do as well. But the funny thing about the TikTok is we got a huge blow up in followers from one of your videos. Mm-hmm. I think people see our videos every once in a while. When we post every once in a while, they're like, oh, why do I follow these guys? I followed them for one video, and then they just don't follow. Because we lose followers every video.
That sucks.
It's fucking annoying. But like, yeah. I get it. You know, you like the video, and now you don't want to follow us. Maybe you're trying to keep your ratio tight. I don't know. It's goofy, but it's something I notice every time. Like, what the fuck? Keep following us.
Just stay on board. Yeah. What are you doing?
If you like our video, follow us.
Why are you jumping ship? Yeah.
Don't follow us and never unfollow us. How about that? Come on.
I don't see any of you guys making TikToks. Like,
yeah. Come on. God damn it. Yeah, we're rambling at the end of the show.
Yep.
That's going to wrap it up. Yep. Like I said, we'll see you next week. Episode 113. We'll have some good stuff to talk about for the show. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you next week. Peace out.